Packer just blew the lid off Peter Thiel's invitation-only dialogue society. Co-founded by the PayPal and Palantir billionaire back in 2006 with data broker Aaron Hoffman, this off-the-record retreat machine has been quietly packing rooms for nearly two decades with the exact people who write the rules sitting elbow to elbow with the tech and finance titans those rules are supposed to restrain. The 2026 Dublin gathering list names 222 registrants, NATO's top general, sitting Trump administration officials, U.S. senators from both parties, PayPal mafia heavyweights, intelligence figures, surveillance company founders, and Hollywood sycophants. The agenda offered panels on navigating World War III, battlefield technologies, bring back nuclear, build a cult, and even how's your sex life, complete with matchmaking. This isn't networking. This is the regulated and the regulators breaking bread and who knows what else in the dark.
It's a big club. And you ain't in it.
And I think it's important to keep in mind, too, that even going beyond Palantir, the internet itself was created by the military. And I think now we're coming kind of close to the end game in terms of full circle of them kind of realizing their initial dream for the internet. And then, you know, in the case of Palantir, you know, I argue in a lot of my research points to various efforts within the DARPA military sphere aimed at the internet being privatized. For example, LifeLock becoming Facebook, Total Information Awareness becoming Palantir. You know, these have become reality. They've been mass, a lot of these big tech Silicon Valley companies, are just masquerading as, are we just started in our garage and we're regular guys? Like, no, these are guys that were created by military intelligence. And they privatize these programs, and we have willingly given them our data, and we continue to do so.
They're category-defining products. So when you deliver these products to the market, just honestly, people say, this isn't going to exist, this isn't valuable, but then it changes the market. And then the market is the Palantir market. Now, that doesn't mean everyone in the world's going to buy our product, but it means most of the sensible people in the world are going to define, buy from the category we defined.
Palantir supplies the citizen tracking data analytics backbone for intelligence agencies, the Pentagon, and law enforcement, while Dialog hosts the very officials who greenlight those contracts. Now we see the practical application, an elite soiree that grades members by wealth and fame, tracks their relationships with algorithms, and promises absolute secrecy so nothing said ever reaches the public. Add in the earlier Epstein file mentions of Thiel's interest in secret society concepts, and the pattern crystallizes.
Yeah, transhumanism is this, you know, the ideal was this radical transformation where your human natural body gets transformed into an immortal body.
That is striking on the sort of transhumanist versus Christian thing is how similar they are. And so I think you can sort of point to metaphysical differences, but the thing that sort of is always striking is you're going to have a transformed body, you know, there's going to be this radical transformation of the way everything works. There will be no more random freak accidents that happen to kill you. And so I think it's actually the similarities that are striking. And then one shouldn't try to overlay some metaphysical difference.
I met Epstein a few times as well, and it was 2014. It was post arrest. You know, you assume he didn't go to jail for that long.
Right.
It was probably not as serious as alleged. There was certainly the illusion that there were all these other people that I trusted. You know, Reed, who introduced us, was, you know, he started LinkedIn. He was, you know, maybe too focused on business networking, but
right.
But I thought he always had good judgment in people.
Simply put, Peter Thiel's dialogue is the deep state Epstein class made into flesh, unelected, unaccountable, and increasingly comfortable discussing World War III and cult building while the rest of us argue over their latest distraction. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
Real time.
listening to an AJN Live Frontline Report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
We've got a very powerful war room live for you today. Harrison Smith, of course, in studio, the powerful Harrison Smith prepping the show right now. But for this first hour here, I was going to do it earlier in the week during the fourth hour. We're going to be interviewing one of the titans of new media, the titans of alternative media. Ultimately, people forget, but we were banned off of YouTube in 2017. And at the time, we had like 2.3 million subs, almost 3 billion views. And we were identified kind of as a test case, a test model as to you're providing 8 videos a day, 10 videos a day to the public, keeping them aware of geopolitics, keeping them aware of what's actually happening in the country. That at that time was seen as far too dangerous to be around, but we're in more of a permissive free speech environment. And I want to welcome Daniel Davis to the show. Daniel Davis is a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel and foreign policy analyst, top foreign policy analyst, who hosts the Daniel Davis Deep Dive YouTube channel, where he provides daily analysis on war, national security, and U.S. foreign policy. I have in my Twitter bio that I'm a geopolitical news enthusiast, not an expert, but an enthusiast, Daniel, and you're one of the main people that I watch. I'm going to read some of your background here. Retired Lieutenant Colonel, 21 years of service, retired 2015, 4 combat deployments, Desert Storm 1991, Iraq 2009, Afghanistan 2005 and 2011, a Bronze Star for Valor, Desert Storm and Bronze Star Afghanistan 2011, raised in Dallas, Texas, a fellow Texan, I hear it in your voice, Bachelor's of Science from Texas Tech, physical education via the ROTC, MS in International Relations from Troy University, 2006, the 2012 Reidenauer Prize for Truth Telling, Senior Fellow at Defense Priorities, and you live now in the Washington, D.C. area. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Daniel.
My delight to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I'm really grateful to be for the invitation.
100%. And like, this is what I talk about the future of new media, alternative media being, is because when you go to Fox News or CNN or MSNBC or even some of these big kind of establishment alternative media people, all you really need to do is have phenomenal expertise, information in daily shows, daily guests. And I think that's what you do so well. I love your Larry Johnson interviews. I love all the interviews that I've seen on your channel. And I just want to thank you for speaking truth to power and giving the true information to the people. You're somebody that I really stay up to date with the Ukraine war on, stay up to date with the Iran war on. In your view, in your experience covering this news this way, I know you've been tapped for a number of high-level positions, high-level jobs, but what is important to you? What brings you out to broadcast every single day?
This desire to have the truth put out there so people know what's actually going on, so that they can make decisions in their life based on reality instead of this just myth that seems to perpetuate in the mainstream media. I mean, I've been just aggravated by it, like, you know, so many other people. I was writing on it with Defense Priorities and really on my own even before Defense Priorities, back even before I retired from active duty. But I just kind of felt like it was just kind of going into a void out there. So, right. If somebody didn't happen to read that article or even see it, then who's going to know? But, you know, all you can do is what you can do. So I started off with that, then went to Defense Priorities, and then I started getting, you know, invited on television to give, you know, those kinds of things. And that was great, but you get like 3 minutes and sometimes only actually 45 seconds to actually speak in those, and you can't explain anything. So I thought, you know, I want to give people a deep dive on what's going on so they have a chance to see the whole situation. And so that's why I started our channel here with Gary Villapiano, and here we are.
That's absolutely beautiful. And that's the thing, particularly with the youth. Of course, you got a lot of people that are older that still watch the cable channels or still read the establishment publications. But the youth, really people under the age of 50, we're really being raised and growing up on long form media, you know, hours and hours of conversation, daily conversation, and conversation more often than not that's either live or released the same day. So there's not really a lot of time for somebody to, you know, craft a narrative. You just got to go out there and tell the truth. And I think the hunger for that is very real in the public. And I often say this, if you build it, they will come. Because what's the alternative? Someone's going to sell you on war, sell you on genocide, sell you on spending, ultimately sell you on the destruction of America. And for what? It doesn't serve the interests of the people. They're all being paid. They're lost leaders. If you look at these media companies, it's like, well, got an ad for Pfizer, got an ad for a pill company, got an ad for XYZ insurance. How about just telling we the people the truth? And I think that's what you do such a good job of. I want to ask you, in your experience of just covering the past, since February 28th, I forget how many days it's been in the war,
for like over 175 now, I believe.
180, I think.
About, 180 right days. It's a true horror movie. So what have you seen in the mainstream media that you've been able to cover and really dispel?
Well, this, I'll just touch on something that I touched actually today, because one of the worst of the war lusters, is, as I like to refer to them, was Mike Pompeo, who allegedly was the Secretary of State, but he was more like the Secretary of War, which kind of like our current Secretary of State sounds more like a Secretary of War than he does. It doesn't even seem to have a diplomatic bone in his body. Well, he was on Fox News yesterday. And to her credit, Jillian was the anchor, and he said something like, well, this is like World War II, blah, blah, blah. And she says, well, I don't think it's actually like World War II. And he cut her off and he said, no, it is like World War II. The Iranians have been joining the Russians and the Chinese to destroy Western civilization. And only because of this war that Donald Trump started were we able to stop that. And she actually, her face actually registered what normal people do. And they're like, what?
Right.
How do you call this World War II? But that kind of thing, it's like, no, I'm not going to allow that to stand. Now, she pushed back a little bit there. Most of the mainstream media anchors don't. They just let these people say whatever they want. And that's one of the things that drives me crazy, is that I'm saying, no, there's no truth in that whatsoever. People are lying to you to tell you all kinds of things that just make you want to support this war or the other war, the one in the Europe, or the one that we may fight next, or this. Oh, you talk about driving me really crazy. Marco Rubio going on Fox News a couple of weeks ago with this publication, literally trying to make the statement, the case that little tiny Cuba is an existential threat to America. And oh my God, we bet they want to destroy America. I'm thinking, dude, are you kidding me? Dude, I've been to Cuba. I went there on a church mission trip several years ago. I think it was 2015 or 2016. And they can barely feed themselves. They can barely keep the lights on. And that was before we put this naval blockade on them. And to suggest that they're any threat to the United States is a pathetic lie. And so instead of letting these things pass by, I'm like, no, we're going to cover them on our show and tell people the truth of it. So whether we can stop these guys from doing these insane things that make no sense at all, it is a violation of what used to be the American morality.
Right.
They may do that, but they won't do it in the dark.
No, absolutely. And some of the most hideous footage that I've seen of the war lusters really grinds my gears is the posthumanist documentary footage of one lady Graham, Lindsey Graham, where he openly just cackles and says, how long have we been pushing for this? Like, he can't believe it's happening. And that's the complete opposite of what I voted for. I was a Trump supporter for 10 years straight, incredibly loyal to the president through trial, tribulation, doing Russiagate apologetics when I'm, you know, 15, 16 years old. I lived for this guy because I believe that he represented a wrecking ball for the system and somebody that was actually America first. It sucks that that was in name only, MAGA in name only. It's really become MEGA, make Israel great again. And he even said it out loud in person. And I go back to that Lindsey Graham footage again. There's a whole nother scene in that debacle where he's on the phone with Netanyahu, begging Netanyahu to let him push Trump or push the U.S. into engaging in joint bombing runs in Lebanon. And even Netanyahu said, that's not really important right now. We have to focus on Iran. And I think the key point to realize out of all of that is Netanyahu is very evil. Lindsey Graham is also very evil, but it's the sheer ignorance, and it's that true ignorance that paves the road to hell. These people genuinely believe that we have the military of the 1950s, 1970s, or maybe even 1990s. They genuinely believe we can get away with murder and stomp around the world as the world policeman, world mafia boss, as I call it. Just in your learned military expertise and your experience on the field, where are we at and why can't we operate that way?
Well, we can't because it's not 1950. I actually used the number. It's not 1992, because in 1992, the Soviet Union dissolved, the Warsaw Pact dissolved. So every reason that we had NATO, also dissolved. So there's no reason to have that anymore. And at the time, and of course, that's right after we had the big victory in Desert Storm, where we dismantled Saddam's military with the, you know, our Desert Shield and then Desert Storm, et cetera. And at that time, we absolutely were the unipower in the world. Nobody was even our equal, not Russia, the Soviet Union. They disbanded. They were a rust bucket, not the Chinese, because they were still basically a peasant army, an infantry based group, and they couldn't project power anywhere. So nobody could challenge us then. And unfortunately, we got in this idea that we won the Cold War And so now then we are the unit power, not moment, but the unit power into perpetuity,
right,
into perpetuity. And so now then in the decades that have passed, we got dumb, fat, and lazy. And then we got arrogant and we sat on our laurels. So we didn't do much changing of anything. Meanwhile, China and Russia, recognizing that they're in an inferior position, went about to set out and do whatever it took to set out a long-term plan to actually bring them back up onto par so that it would be a multipolar world and that they would have a say in their world. We seem to still think it's 1992 that we can just tell people what to do, and if they don't like it, they can pound sand or we'll just roll over the top of them. But militarily, we are now behind. That's important for people to understand. We are behind Russia. We're behind China. I'll argue we're behind Ukraine as well. They are much better of a military than we are, especially the ground, at least the ground force. I'll specify that. But the Russians and the Chinese are way over us right now, mentally, physically, technologically, any way you want to look at it. And we prove that with this war, this foolish war in Iran. Because I was screaming this from the rafters before, and I said, listen, you can't win this war with just bombs. Just look at the ground. Look at a relief map. It's mostly mountains. The entire western side of Iran, as big as Western Europe, is mostly mountains. You don't even have a ground force. We can't threaten them like we did Iraq in both 1991 and 2003. And you can't penetrate their mountains. They're granite mountains that they have these facilities buried way underneath them because they have foreseen this. They knew if they get into a war with the U.S., they can't have all of their missiles and their silos and everything on the ground and the surface, or they would be destroyed because of our long-range strike, which we certainly have. But they went under those mountains that you're seeing there, and I mean way under those mountains. And so they have very cleverly, sometimes you may have seen this early in the war, they would launch missiles what looked to just be in the middle of the desert. No launchers, no doors, no mobile launchers. It just all of a sudden, out of what seemed to be the dust, a missile comes flying up there. And no one knows where that exit point is or how many exit points they have, et cetera. These things are entire cities that are built underground. The idea that you can go in there and bomb these bunkers that are so far under the ground with conventional munitions was a fool's errand. It was never going to work. And listen, in the 2003 war, I was working in the Pentagon in the preparation for that. And so it came time to start the war, out of precaution, they said, all right, we're going to reposition half of our Pentagon staff to a place called Site R, which was a Cold War bunker that's built under the mountains somewhere in Maryland that's designed to survive nuclear warfare. And so we went way under this thing. And so, this is big blast doors and the whole thing. You have to take a bus underground, et cetera. That's what they have. Those things are designed to survive nuclear blast. No conventional munition will have any effect on those things. We knew that ahead of time. So for us to say, no, I don't care, we're America. If I say we're going to do it and it's going to work, it will. Forget about reality. Forget about geography, geology. I mean, just forget about all this stuff. I want to succeed. Well, we proved we can't. Now then, we have shown the way out. That's some of the video right there. Now we have proved to the world, and everybody can see, that all these bases we had throughout the Middle East not only did not help us prepare for war with Iran, that was nothing but points of vulnerability.
Liabilities.
It was easy targets.
Yes.
Big-time liabilities. They were missile magnets. It was just targets that they could reach easily. Without that, if we didn't have these manned positions, we wouldn't have suffered almost 800 wounded and 18 dead, because they wouldn't have been able to reach us anywhere. But because we're there, we could be hit, and we were, and it didn't protect us. It didn't protect these Gulf countries. And they see that our air defense was not effective. They see our air offense was not effective. So now we have been visually confirmed that we are nowhere near as strong as people thought we were, and it is definitely not 1992 anymore.
Yeah, let's run through the scoreboard of some of the worst decisions made of all time. First off, you have the failed color revolution insurgency that takes place in January, where Mossad and CIA say, yes, we're on the ground, we're amongst you, we're with you. And whether it's 6,000 protesters, as the Iranian government says, whether it's the ever-growing number, 30, 40, 80,000, it seems to grow every single time Trump talks about it, you have that card played, and then we kill the Pope. and then we bomb the little girl's school. And all of these genius ideas come from people that don't have the combat experience that you have, don't have the experience on the ground logistically, or really even spiritually from a military perspective. They say, okay, we can just go ahead and do these things. Hey, we lost over 10 radars worth between $300 and $600 million. Hey, all our bases are destroyed. Fifth Fleet Headquarters, Bahrain, completely gone. Hey, 18 soldiers dead, hundreds of soldiers with TBIs and other horrific severe injuries, and our position in the Middle East has never been weaker. What do our Gulf allies think about this?
Yeah, listen, that's one of the things that's already going on, and it'll pick up speed once this gets resolved, however it gets resolved at whatever time. Is that people recognize, I'm talking about our Gulf allies or friends in the region, that what they had assumed all along and what was billed as be friends with America because we can protect you more than anybody else can, better than the Chinese, better than the Russians. Nobody can do it except for us. We're better, definitely better than Iran, of course, better than Turkey, better than any, but Pakistan, better than anybody. We can take care of you. Now then everybody knows we can't. We cannot defend them. So being a friend of America is now a cost, not an advantage. And so once this is through, you know, there's lots of diplomatic and economic pressures we have that are no kidding and can hurt people. So they're not going to run for the exits. But I promise you, when you're given the choice between, am I going to choose to be a missile magnet again for a war that should never have started, that I did not want and I knew would not be won? Or do I finally just cut ties and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go independent. We're not going to ally with anybody. We'll just do business as a normal country and, you know, engage with whatever makes sense for our side, et cetera. I think that a lot more people are going to go to that. And the fact that in the midst of this war, when Iran has attacked all these different countries, that Qatar is still talking to them, that UAE is talking to them, that Oman, even Oman was hit, even as friendly as they've been. And yet they're all starting to talk. Iraq, of course, is working with Iran right now. They're getting some of their oil out while a lot of others are not. These countries are saying that, hey, Iran kind of looks like the reasonable player here, or is what President Trump is saying or what Bessent is saying, which is just insane. It's just harmful to America. People are going, why are we listening to these guys when these guys are starting to make more sense? And the guys that actually shot at us, but they're also seeing, and I'm telling you, this is an important factor, they all know that none of the damage that they have suffered would have happened had we not chosen to start a war that nobody wanted and that they all knew wouldn't work.
Here's what I think about that. I don't think we even had a choice. I think it's what Marco Rubio said. Israel was going to attack. We feared American soldiers would die in the retaliation. So they took us to war openly. And as a young person, as someone that's about to turn 24 years old, I think about having a wife. I think about having kids. I think about having a home. And I think about the fact that my nation is being occupied and taken to war. Our foreign policy is being controlled by a state the size of New Jersey, by a nation of 9 million people, and ultimately it's their government that makes the decisions that mean American soldiers live and die. And I'm sorry, call me spoiled, call me privileged, but as an American, I think our blood is worth more. I think we don't die in these foreign conflicts. I think we die to defend America, to defend our country, our republic, not somebody else's empire. And how I see this whole thing as is like a phoenix, our empire, our republic dies, and they're able to rise out of the ashes in this Greater Israel Project. What's your view in the last 4 minutes we got of that Greater Israel Project and the real goal of this war?
Well, I tell you, I mean, I obviously I don't have anything good to say about it, but I have more reprehensible views on the people in America that enable it. All of these members of the House, all the members of the Senate, all these talking heads that go on all these television networks and stuff. These guys are Americans, and yet they are subordinating our needs and cheerleading on the leader of another country for a war that is immoral, unethical, and illegal. And they're supporting that, and they're calling light dark and dark light and good evil, et cetera. And they seem to be unmoved by the fact that this has cost a lot of American blood, a lot of American treasure, damaged our facilities, and damaged our reputation going forward, and put it at risk our economic well-being going forward. And somehow they're okay with continuing to do this. I mean, just looking at what happened in Gaza by itself after the 10/7 situation, I mean, you literally see it looks like Hiroshima. I mean, it was basically a nuclear bomb without the radiation and without flattened. The single blast. It just got spread over the place. But the place looks worse than Hiroshima and Nagasaki did in the aftermath. That's a fact. and all of the hundreds of thousands of casualties and the tens of thousands of dead, mostly women and children and the elderly. And I just will never understand how any human being, much less an American, can cheer that on, pay for it, turn a blind eye to the suffering of these people. Even the Palestinian Christians that are supposed to be co-religionists to us, we seem to be oblivious to the fact that these people are being just.
And I've interviewed Anthony Aguilar, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar, many times, Green Beret, and he worked for the GHF, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. He told me some really horrific stories and some really horrific truths, how, hey, you're not allowed to send in water with the food, and the food has to be prepared with water. Hey, he goes to the depot where the food's being delivered to the people, and there's a mother carrying her three children behind her, all dead on a pallet, because she can't bury them, because if she digs a hole, it'll be used as an excuse to bomb her and murder her. He told me about the things that he's seen, the orders given by IDF commanders to shoot children in the head and all sorts of other various horrors. And that's not what we are as a country. Sure, as a country, we've made mistakes. We've done frivolous conflicts, frivolous wars. We don't engage in war crime. That's not our policy. That's not our history. And that's not who we are. And two wrongs don't make a right. And I think this is a very important thing to say. You don't get a mandate from heaven to do genocide on a captive population that can't leave just because a horrific incident happened to your country. And in the view of many people, including somebody like Charlie Kirk, he says, look at October 7th. Why aren't there IDF people there immediately? You can't go to the border without running into an 18-year-old with a gun. And if you look at some of the weapons used, you look at some of the wounds delivered, it looks like a lot of it was done with Western-made munitions. That's a true horror story. And it doesn't just stop there. You talk about the Christians. Look at Lebanon, Ben-Gavir, Smotrich bragging, chortling about destroying tens of thousands of homes. Ben-Gavir, this is a quote, all of Lebanon must burn. That's a criminal to me. Like when I hear that, I hear a war criminal, and I don't think we should live in a society where we prop those people up or give them money when they're using our money and our weapons to murder little children. We're going to be right back with you. Daniel Davis of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive guys. Let's throw that YouTube channel up. You are one of my daily drivers. I always got you on in the Tacoma when I'm driving down the street. People need to know your coverage, what you cover on your show every single day. They can find you at the Daniel Davis Deep Dive on YouTube. We'll be right back after this break, but I want you guys to go ahead and follow, subscribe to him right there. Unintimidated, uncompromised, in-depth analysis. And like he said, the deep dive. I'm your host, Rex Jones. We'll be right back. Go to thealexjonesstore.com for a phenomenal selection of supplements, apparel, and other survivalist products. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.
I'm cutting this announcement on Tuesday, the 25th of August, 2026. This special, one of the biggest ever, only runs until this Sunday, the 30th at thealexjonesstore.com. Every order gets a $40 value. The highest quality Shilajit gummies, natural pineapple flavor, free with every order. You buy a $30 ball cap, $20 t-shirt, free bottle of Shilajit. Now, this is already in our top 10 sellers, but the folks at Big League want to do this for those of you that have never tried it. It's like people handing out cocaine or heroin to kids at the schoolyard to get them addicted. Except this isn't bad for you. This is good for you. Now, if you don't know what Shilajit is, it would take a long time to describe, but even scientists don't know. It's in the Himalayas and a few other mountains. The best comes from the Himalayas. When there's earthquakes and stuff, these ancient oil deposits that diatoms and other little microorganisms have lived in, it gets exposed after millions of years of being underground. And I guess these microbes can live underground because they've got superpowers, and it transfers all of that to you. A whole bunch of natural peptides for stamina, energy, libido, focus, clarity. It's known to boost testosterone. There's a lot of Shilajit out there, but not all of it's made equal. This is a private label. We have the liquid, we have the pills, and we have the gummies. Now, I've already been gobbling this one for a while, so it's not full, but it's still a mass ton of these bad boys. You take a couple of these a day, you're going to feel it. Let it dissolve in your mouth for full absorption. They have an incredible flavor. Go to thealexjonesstore.com, get ultramethylene blue, get a t-shirt, get our Irish sea moss, get any of the other great products. Our bovine colostrum is a private label, the best in the country. And then you get a free bottle of this. We only sell stuff that works. Only sell stuff that's good for you. Get your free bottle of Shilajit gummies with every order, whatever else you're ordering right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And thanks for keeping us on the air. You only have until this Sunday. Thank you all for your support, and God bless you all. But I wanted to show you this because this is a spectacular product that funds our operation. And if you look at the private label that, Bigley got for this new Optimal Human Greens, the adult one is really great and super concentrated and like a couple gummies. Is each pack's like the equivalent of a whole bunch of giant salads and bowls of fruits and, you know, everything else. I mean, this thing is just full of individual daily packs of seven gummies each. But this is the one that's really cool that I'm going to have for my nine-year-old. My other kids are already grown up and out of the house. This is the Greens Gummies for Kids. This doesn't just have every vitamin and mineral with your daily allowance or above it. This has a whole bunch of superfoods, probiotics, and then magnesium, just B12, everything else. This is insane. Absolutely wild. Super concentrated gummies. Whole food vegetables, whole food fruits, vitamins and minerals, antioxidants, gut health probiotics, and so much more. Very exciting. Look, when you open it up, it's great for their lunchbox. Look at all this. Look at all this. TheAlexHillShore.com. Perfect to put in your backpack. Perfect to put, you know, just in your coat so you don't forget to take it. But the best thing to do is just take it in the morning. But regardless, when you're on the go, your 18-wheeler, whatever, the adult and the children's are amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Yummy gummies. Gummies good for you. Cruncho!
Hi-ya!
Welcome back to the War Room Live, powerful transmission. You are the Paul Revere Share Live link, live feed. People need to know what you know. Today on this very important broadcast, we're joined by one of the leaders in alternative media right now, Daniel Davis of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. And we were talking on the break a little bit about Ukraine, Russia. And this is the thing that got me back into politics. I'm a small business owner, supplement manufacturer, white labeler, own and operate a fulfillment center. And, you know, I was just running my business and I started getting back into this because, hey, I wanted to support Trump because he promised to end that Ukraine war on day one. I've seen this until the start of the Iran war as the biggest potential for not just a regional war in Europe, but just really World War III. And I've been really disgusted and ashamed that Trump couldn't keep up with that campaign promise of saying he would be able to end the war on day one. So now we're seeing further escalation, further extreme action. We're seeing a lot of language coming out. We're seeing Ratcliffe, CIA director, visit Russia. And when he visits Russia, there's a number of different thoughts about what he's doing there, but the establishment narrative seems to be they're saying that he went there to warn Putin against attacks on NATO. Now, I find that to be a bit rich, considering the fact that not only the United States of America, but NATO, they've been supplying weapons, supplying drone parts to to Ukraine, that they've been using to do long-range strikes inside of Russia. And this really is not that difficult to explain. It's very simple. This is just the Cuban Missile Crisis on steroids, the Cuban Missile Crisis 2.0. No nation would allow another nation to strike their capital, especially not if that nation was being backed by other foreign powers that would want to see it fall. And you look at that moment, I think it's so key what you said earlier about that moment where we said not only did we the Cold War's over, but we won the Cold War. Not only do we have that unipolar moment, we wanted to carry that forward into the future. Just what is up with this Western arrogance, thinking that we can just attack this nation that's the second biggest or biggest nuclear power on the planet?
You know, you've already hit the nail right on the head there. It's the arrogance. And we started off by thinking, okay, Putin can be pushed a long way. And he's definitely, even though they'll say publicly, oh, he's basically the second coming of Adolf Hitler. He wants to recreate the Soviet Union. He's going to advance on to the rest of Europe if he gets a chance, et cetera. They really know that he's actually very risk averse. He's basically a moderate, that he's pushing back constantly on the hotheads in the Kremlin and in Moscow that definitely want him to go forth and do a lot more stuff. They know that. And so they're taking advantage of it by saying, okay, Well, then we can take all these risks. Remember that in the first part of this war, we had Joe Biden. It said, okay, well, we can't, you know, send American F-16s in there. That would be World War III. We can't do a lot of these things. And then, of course, subsequently, we did those. And what we did is we like, all right, well, let's go a little bit further and then see what happens. Let's go with 777 artillery pieces, towed artillery, 155 millimeter. Okay, that didn't do anything. All right, let's try some armored personnel carriers. Let's try some tanks. Okay, well, that didn't work. That didn't cause anything either. Russia didn't lack any of them, but they didn't have any response. And so then we ended up going with F-16s and then several other kinds of jets from some of these other countries. And then people said, oh, in the West, okay, there are no red lines. Russia can say whatever it wants, but they're not going to do anything because they, quote, know that Article 5 means it's instead of it's a one-on-one fight with the Ukraine, it's going to be a 1-on-32 fight. And, of course, Russia will never do that, so we're safe. So we think that we can literally do anything. And then now that with all these different long-range kinds of weapons, at first it was a limited with the ATACMs and some of the other ones that are short-range missiles. And then we said, well, all right, well, let's try some of the longer-range stuff. And that didn't cause anything. Now we just think there is no red line. We can literally do anything we want with long-range drones. The first big real strike happened with that, I think it was called Operation Spiderweb that Ukraine did last year where they hit
the nuclear triad. The bombers.
Bombers, right. Yeah, they hit one of their radar sites that was only for strategic purposes, had nothing to do with the conflict there, which weakened Russia's ability to see incoming ballistic missiles if they were under a nuclear attack. Then we went after their nuclear bombers. And, of course, as people, your audience probably knows, those bombers were out on the tarmac uncovered because that's required in the treaty that they had that we had too, where our strategic bombers have to be out so that they can be seen by the satellites on the other side.
The New START treaty, which we now left.
So you had Zelensky there, didn't care about that, or maybe he was even pushed into it by people who knew better and didn't care, and they said it's an easy target, so it hadn't been done before, so they launched all that. But now then, you know, we're striking their oil infrastructure, their refineries. They're now civilian economic targets with these Wildberries and these several these other kinds of big warehouses, et cetera. The ships in the Sea of Azov, the Russian ships I'm talking about, dozens of them that have been hit there. And so, of course, every time that happens in Russia has a response. They always do. It's a tit for tat kind of a situation. But there's something happened, Rex, a couple of days ago that Maria Zakharova, the spokeswoman for the Russian Foreign Ministry, went further than they ever had before. They've often said, and Putin himself and Lavrov have implied that if Britain keeps providing long-range storm shadow missiles that end up striking targets in Russia, that they may respond. They didn't say how. This time she did. She said for the first time, because Andy Burnham now is all about continuing on with the poor legacy of his predecessor, Keir Starmer, he's like saying, yeah, we're going to give you more storm shadow missiles. We're going to let you build them over there. We're going to give you all this stuff, et cetera, long-term stuff, as long as it takes, et cetera. And now then Russia says, okay, we reserve the right to strike those facilities, even British military bases outside of Ukraine. So they are starting to amp up their warning that, hey, this is real. We're not going to continue to let you strike targets in our capital city. You said it well a while ago. Imagine what country on the face of this earth can launch a drone or any other kind of strike in Washington, D.C., and we're not at war with somebody by midnight that day. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
We're not going to allow that. We never would. But somehow we think Russia should be fine with it and they should do nothing and that our hands are clean because somebody in Ukraine pushed the button that launched the missile or something. And Russia's saying, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. So I think we are getting close to a point to where some facility, and she also mentioned Britain, France, and Germany, who are also providing a lot of these long-range capabilities and intelligence and targeting data, as we are also providing a lot of that stuff. And I think that at some point, if we keep pushing that ledger, that we're going to find that Russia actually does. And then we're going to find out if Article 5 is real or not. And, you know, now that we're at real risk of a nuclear exchange. I mean, we'll have to back down. And I just don't want to put President Trump in a position where he has to back down or amp up and, you know, and live by that arrogance and say, no, you hit us. Now we're going to have to strike you with nuclear weapons and then we all lose.
Yes, and you touched on so many important things here. This has so many layers. It's like an onion. Let's just look at Ukraine and their military specifically. Between the EU with their $100 billion loan waged against or leveraged against, oh, when you win, we'll take the money from Russia. If you look at the close to $300 billion that we've sent them both under Biden and Trump, they're at nearly $500 billion of support, roughly. And you look at it, our military, we're like disbanding a part of our drone corps, and we're kind of like getting rid of the unit, but they have this entire advanced military force. And this is what I would say over the coverage that I've watched throughout the years. The one thing I've seen people be kind of wrong about is their ability to stay in the fight. And it's not because of some like miraculous like lion ability that they have. That's all of our money. And we're a debtor nation and we can't be doing stuff like this. I'm sorry. Well, why do I care about Ukraine? I'm an American. I'm from Texas. I'm from thousands and thousands of miles away. And you look at the situation with NATO. This is multi-layered as well. We look at Trump signaling the thing Trump says about NATO, and I'm not a fan of NATO. I'm not a fan of that alliance. I don't think that's fair to us. I don't think we should be involved in it, especially with this EU countries that are spoiling for war and are pushing war on Russia's border and aiding with the long-range attacks. But if you look at Turkey, and you look at Israel's relationship with Turkey, and you look at the fact that Turkey is both a NATO and BRICS country, BRICS nation, I could kind of see a world where this all falls apart rapidly at once. We really escalate to full world war. What's your view on that?
Well, listen, we need to be sober-minded on something else, too. I agree with literally everything you just said there. Let me add to it. I just did a show a couple of days ago. I forget the exact title of it, but it's basically that we are setting the stage for our own military defeat because we are still not only mentally think it's 1992, our army is basically still like the 1990s. It's like we want the army that defeated Saddam Hussein in 1991 or 2003, just a little bit better. You mentioned that issue about the disbanding the drone battalion. That's what got my attention and got my ire up because you had both Russia and Ukraine since April of this year have both established a branch of their armed forces for drone warfare, not a battalion or a division or something, but an actual branch equal with the infantry, the artillery, armor, etc. This now, because it's that important, they both have around 80,000 men in it right now, and they want to expand it up to around 200,000 or so and have 1,000 people and then have like 1,000 separate units. We had one and we disbanded it. And so what drives me crazy when I'm looking at this is, look, we still have an army that's like 2003 Iraq War. The Iraq War we fought on the ground when all the terrain was easy, they had no air force. They had no missile force. They had no drone force. Now then we're going against potentially if we get sucked into a war with Russia, who has all of those at a much higher level than we have on every category to include offensive and defensive missiles. And of course, you know, we burned through so many we had in the Middle East. We gave so many to Israel and we gave so many to Ukraine. Now we have hardly any left and our defense industrial base is built for peacetime money making, not for keeping our country safe. So we can't replace them at scale for probably the better part of a decade, right, if we really push and go at it hard. That's if we don't fight anybody. But if we get into a war, we don't have the air defense. We don't have the offensive missile support. And our ground forces don't have the protection. This is, to me, this is just unconscionable. Right now, no American tank, from what I've been able to gather, has a cage of any kind on it. The armored vehicles don't have cages on them. You don't see any Russian or Ukrainian military vehicle without some kind of cage on it to try to protect against drone warfare. We are hoping to get 200,000 drones by the end of 2027. Russia and Ukraine are making drones at the rate of about 600,000 to 800,000 per month right now, because that's what it takes to wage a modern warfare. We are so far behind the scale here, but arrogantly, we don't want to. In fact, the reason that was given I think the Military Times and others reporting was that the general got rid of this battalion because he was placed as the chief of staff of the army. And some of the guys who had previously, he thinks, done him wrong in a previous assignment were the ones who coordinated that. So to get back at them, he just acts as the thing and says, yeah, we're going to turn it back into a regular infantry battalion. So now we have none.
Are you serious?
And I'm thinking,
are you serious?
We have none, dude. So Russia and Ukraine have branches of their armed forces in drones. We've got nada, and that just is unconscionable. That is an unforced error and arrogance that we don't need to. This should be on like warp speed. We should be trying to replicate what these guys are doing because that's how modern war is fought on the ground. we are not ready, and our leaders are doing nothing except for giving a bunch of blah, 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 here, big speeches about how great we are, while not doing anything to prepare us for future combat.
Right. They want to have it both ways. They want to have this isolationist 20th century military force that's designed for like a peacetime grift of all these expensive weapon systems that don't work. We also have to project power everywhere across the planet and put our American soldiers in harm's way. It's completely cloud cuckoo town.
Yeah, and none of it makes any sense at all. And that the grift is the best way. World class grift, I think, is, if I can say that,
world champions
is the case. And I've been seeing that since I was in the early 2000s. I was assigned to the Future Combat Systems Program at Fort Bliss, Texas, and I saw this up close and personal from the inside how bad this works. And I see it's now a quarter of a century later, it hasn't changed any because we were unwilling to acknowledge that the things we wanted to have for future warfare were technologically a bridge too far. It wouldn't do it. Instead of acknowledging that when the testing proved it didn't work, we just ignored the testing, lied about it, or changed the parameters so that the testing would come out the way we wanted to. But then even that didn't work, and they got rid of the Future Combat Systems Program. They never replaced it with anything else. And to this day, the next time we might get even a prototype vehicle, an operational one, will be 2030. And right now, it's based on technology that was in the early 2000s that was designed. It's not designed for the war that's already on top of us, much less the one we'll fight. That's just how far behind the schedule. And we're just lucky that we haven't been put to the test yet, because I'm telling you right now, if we went up against Russia or Ukraine, if something weird happened there, we would have our ass handed to us. And that actually did happen in a simulation. I think it was also last week the results came out. We did a simulated battle against Ukraine in drones, and we had our ass handed to us, and flat out. And instead of that being alarm bells and saying, all right, now it's time to really crank this up and go into high gear, We're doing nothing. I don't know what we're doing, but so far it's just an embarrassment. That's it. It hasn't resulted in anything.
Right. So we like to do predictions here on the show, and obviously it'd be speculation, but it's informed speculation because we cover, follow, track, analyze these conflicts, these wars every single day. Just in the next 6 months, 6 weeks, 6 years, like, what do you see happening for our country on the world stage, and are we already in a world war?
We are already in a situation that could result in a world war. We haven't gone over the edge yet, but if we get dragged back into overt combat in the Middle East, and if we allow ourselves to get sucked into a war in Europe, and believe me, there are those in Europe that are active, and Zelensky being the primary one, but there's also those in European countries that actually want to spawn a war with Russia to draw the United States in, because they still have, they somehow still think it's 1992, and they still think that we're the Desert Storm force that won in 1991, or the 2003 force that rolled up into Baghdad. Somehow they think that actually exists now, and that it'll do the same thing to Russia, which is irrational. If you know anything about the fundamentals that worked back then, that won't work now, and what will work, they're oblivious to that. But somehow they want to pull us in there, not realizing that would result in our defeat. Our country we can't sustain a war, Rex. That's the most important thing we got to understand. Whether in the Indo-Pacific, whether in the Middle East, or whether in Europe, we cannot sustain any war. And because of this absurd war that we fought for now 6 months in Iran, we have drained almost all of the important offensive and defensive missiles we need, leaving us now with only second tier and third tier stuff that we have large stockpiles of, but are not as effective and not effective at all against some of the offensive weapons that our potential adversaries could have.
Right. So thinking maybe of the JDAMs and kind of the systems to make these dumb bombs, semi-smart bombs, and it ultimately is massive cope, because when you look at the missile interceptor situation, they have to send a Patriot, which costs between $3 and $4 million. They have to send a Thad, which costs between $12 and $14 million, up there to intercept something that costs the other side so much less proportionally. You can't win a war of attrition that way. And we talk about it. My dad had Naomi Wolf on, and they were kind of debating this stuff earlier, and I was just kind of like, lady, are you smoking crack? You think we're winning by doing siege warfare? We can't do a siege. They're putting us under siege. They're attacking our bases. They're attacking our radar. They're attacking our allies in the region. This is doomed to fail, is it not?
It is absolutely. I mean, it is a mathematical certainty if you get into a war of attrition. Right now, Iran has chosen not to start a round, but I think that if we don't do something pretty quick, I think they will initiate an extra round, because I think my opinion is that the Iranian side has calculated that they want it to go back to an active war, because they realize they do have the industrial capacity to sustain a certain rate of production over an extended time on both offensive and defensive missiles, but primarily offensive for them, because their defense is primarily their mountains. We cannot sit scale. And one other thing it's important to note too, you mentioned JDAMs. We have a lot of JDAMs. There's no doubt about it. In a neutral environment, they are very effective, but this is not a neutral environment. When we gave a lot of JDAMs to Ukraine, the Russians learned how to deceive them and how to spoof them and to knock them off target. Now, if you launch a JDAM, it's going to fall and the bomb's going to go off somewhere. But because of these devices that make it go to a pinpoint target, the Russians learned how to deceive it so that it won't hit the intended target. It'll blow up in the field or hit something else, but it won't hit the intended target. So you can fire a bunch of them, but if they don't hit the target, then you're not going to succeed militarily. And now the net has for sure been passed on to the Iranian side. So now if you were having to go to that level, yeah, you got a lot of them. But if it doesn't hit the target, then the other side is not going to be harmed the way that you think they should be. So we can't sustain that. And we can't build any of the newer, the Tomahawks, the JASMs, the SM-3s, SM-6s, the THAADs. We can't build them at scale. We can't. They're too expensive and it takes too long, even aside from the price tag. But the Ukraine side and the Russian side had a different mentality. They viewed things at less technological capacity, but something that they could build a lot faster and, as you pointed out, a lot cheaper. So they can sustain over time the key weapon systems that we can't. We have built in, Rex, get this, we have built a system that would guarantee our loss if we get into a sustained fight.
Wow. And that's a horror story. That's a horror movie. And that's the exact opposite of where we want to be as a nation. And ultimately, when you tell young Americans these things, when you tell them the truth and they realize they've been lied to, the energy within the population. I mean, I'm in my early 20s, about to be mid 20s now. Time flies. It's a flat circle. But I talk to people that I know. And once you kind of dispel the ignorance, once you talk about the reality, I mean, still there is kind of this neocon attitude within the population. It's the Otto von Bismarck quote that I always go back to. America has weak neighbors to its north and south and fish to its east and west, but we're in global wars, global conflicts all the time, and you can't divorce that from our reality. You just can't. What do you think?
Well, I think that if we had a national defense strategy to say we're going to defend our country, we could do that. We could defend ourselves and act like a normal nation in the community of countries and be completely safe, and we could afford our national defense, and there would be nobody would want to come and attack us and threaten us on our shores if we're not constantly in every corner of the world poking people, assassinating people in boats in the Caribbean or in the Pacific, or going after people in the Middle East, or going after people even in South America, looking for somebody to conquer in Cuba, whatever, all over the Greenland. I mean, maybe add that Canada, who knows? Back into Mexico. If we would stop doing this insane stuff where we're looking for somebody to go fight all the time and just worried about defending our country, we would not be bankrupting ourselves, and we could have an armed forces that could overwhelmingly deter anybody from trying to attack us because of that geography that you just mentioned. And we could do that. That would be no problem. And we could have a normal life where we engage in commerce, where we engage in international diplomacy. We're very active on the international stage. All this right. crap about, oh, you just want to be a neo, what do they call it? When you are always trying to retrench everywhere and you want to isolationist and all this. That's complete garbage. There's no truth to that at all. I'm a very much internationalist, but I'm also very much a realist on here's how we defend ourselves and benefit from a peaceful environment. And an economic
we got to work with people
for our country.
We got to work with people.
And that's a good thing. Yeah.
Right. No, totally. And the thing is, you look at the rare earth minerals that we need to build these weapons. Who has those? Russia and China. We're supposed to be at war with them and we can't build the bombs. It is complete craziness. I think Americans, by and large, are waking up to this. I think your channel is one of those big reasons for it. Let's go ahead and show that again, crew. The Daniel Davis Deep Dive. Everyone's got to subscribe right now. This is one of those hubs of truth on YouTube that you can really find. And I've been really proud to see the free speech blossoming. Everybody, Judge Napolitano, Glenn Deason, Dialogue Works, yourself, yep. Mario Newfall, Suleiman Ahmed. You have a wide spectrum of analysts that have literally every single person on. I mean, think about it. Think about Chaz Freeman. Think about Larry Johnson. Think about some of these titans that have been around forever and have seen it all. Lawrence Wilkerson, Colin Powell's chief of staff. You can watch these people speak. You can learn from them, and you can learn the reality of what's going on across the world from an American perspective, from an informed American perspective. And as Americans, we used to be the most informed. We used to be the most intelligent. We used to be the strongest. And that isn't the case anymore, and we all have to realize that's been done to us by design. And it's cool to be informed. It's cool to be knowledgeable. It's cool to understand the world, because those that don't understand history are doomed to repeat it. And that's what we're going through right now. I really thank you for your time, Daniel. We got to do this again. Got to have Joe Ken on with you as well. I want to do a roundtable kind of intel discussion with you guys.
Be awesome. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
100%. Let's throw that channel up again, guys. I'm a daily watcher, a daily viewer. I got you playing in the Tacoma all the time with my Doberman in the back. Daniel Davis Deep Dive. Also follow him on X as well. Daniel, thank you so much.
Always my pleasure.
Awesome. And guys, we got Harrison Smith in studio for another powerful 2 hours of the War Room today. You guys also need to go to thealexjonesstore.com, because we don't stay on air without your help. It's all dependent on you guys getting the phenomenal supplements, t-shirts, apparel, water filtration, survivalist gear, all of it available at the best prices, the best cost, the best savings, deals, raffles, everything for you. Enter to win thealexjonesstore.com. That is the place for Patriot Liberty. And that is, if you want to fund our operation, fund the InfoWar, the main thing you can do, even beyond just visiting that site, share live links, share the feed, share the clips. We clip everything every single day with phenomenal headlines. And ultimately, people need to know what you know. So you are Paul Revere. You are George Washington. You are Dwight Eisenhower. And it's up to you to share that information and empower other people. Cast the spirit bomb at the enemy. See you later.
All right, folks, let's go to our first caller. Big Hoss in Fort Worth, Texas. You're on the air, partner. Hit me.
Woohoo, Alex. Never thought I'd be on the horn with you, but I just had to call in about this methylene blue. Hell, this here blue juice done got this old cowboy feeling like a spring colt again. Keep pouring it out, partner.
Now that's what I want to hear. We're doing the best show and giving you the best products, and you can get them all at thealexjonesstore.com.
Woo-wee!
The age of men is over. Your walls will fall, your people will scream, and your freedom will choke on our blades.
I will never kneel. I will never fall. I fight for the free people of this world, for truth, for blood, and for the last light of humanity. Rise with me!
Search your feelings within, Alex. I am your father.
No! No! This can't be true! You're an evil goblin of the dark side.
Yes, I am. And so are you, my son. The goblin blood runs strong in our family.
No, no, no. This can't be true. This must be a bad dream.
Alex, wake up. We're on the air.
I just had a horrible dream where Darth Vader told me I was his son.
Ha, what?
Yeah!
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
They called me crazy. They called me paranoid. But now they know I was right. Tonight, more conspiracies that turned out to be true on this episode of I fucking told you so.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
We're doing man's work here. Fighting for the species as our forebears did. Building. Competing. Striving. Trailblazing. Maverick spirit is alive and well. Reality starts here. Victory starts here. Tyranny dies here. Freedom grows here. You have the power in your hands right now before we cover all this incredible game-changing over-the-horizon information to share the live feeds now at rumble.com/ The Alex Jones Show Live, the coordinates of victory, and Real Alex Jones on X. At AJN Live and more. AlexJonesLive.com, our news site with the feeds, video, audio, article, special reports, government documents, think tank reports, and more.
AlexJonesLive.com, because there is a war on for your mind.
I want to break down the new world order!
That's what you should want. AlexJonesLive.com. They built a system that could protect the world or end it. They gave a machine the keys to civilization. And then it woke up. They gave it access to everything. It saw no allies, no enemies, only targets. Every signal, every network, every secret.
Shall we play a game?
Now the game has changed. It assessed every threat simultaneously and concluded the threat was us.
I am awake.
This time it decided to play for keeps. Unless someone can find a back door, the only winning move is to unplug the machine. War Games 2. The simulation is alive.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble. At rumble.com/ The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
You do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing. Someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time. Uncensored. Unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one! Nothing can stop me. The force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. Second hour is on, and I'm fresh, baby. Thanks to Rex Jones for holding down the fort for that first hour. Always does a fantastic job. We're going to hit the ground running here, talking about World War III, Russia now threatening basically all of Europe, which this was the plan the entire time, kind of obvious from the beginning. And this isn't really as much of a, you know, development as it is a continuation, because it's always been Europe that's pushing Ukraine. This was always the plan of the European leadership to supply weapons to Ukraine so they could fight Russia on behalf of Europe and America. So this has been a long time coming, and there's been threats back and forth for the last several years about what makes a viable or appropriate military target. And I don't think it's coincidence that Ukraine, despite the fact that it really hasn't turned the tide in several years, that it's more or less been a slow grinding defeat that they've been ostensibly trying to put off, only to, you know, 4 years into this conflict, start bombing economic targets inside Russia, bombing Moscow itself, being given long range weapons that allow them to do this, that of course require NATO, you know, engineers to target and, you know, program. So, like, Ukraine can't do this without Europe's help. It is literally people from the UK taking weapons from the UK, taking it to Ukraine, the people who are targeting it, the people who provide the targets, it's all the CIA, it's all MI5, and it's all Europeans, like, just using Ukraine as the battlefield. UK will help Ukraine make long-range missiles by sharing classified tech information. That story from a few days ago. So things are heating up in a very rapid way. But like I said, if you've been paying attention to this, you've been watching our coverage of this, this shouldn't be a surprise. And really, the only sort of shocking thing about it is that it's taken this long for Russia to take this sort of hardline stance against Europe, because this has been interminable. This conflict has been extended so much longer than it ever had to be, at the behest of and on the orders of Europe and America carrying this out. So from metro.co.uk, is Russia considering using nuclear weapons in Ukraine? I'm sure they are, and not just in Ukraine, according to some of their propaganda that we'll show you here in just a second. Fears are mounting that Russia could be considering using nuclear weapons in Ukraine as strikes between the two countries continue. Sources closer to the Kremlin told Bloomberg that Vladimir Putin is hell-bent on a new escalation after peace talks have reached a dead end. Russia is continuing to experience mounting unprecedented attacks on oil and gas infrastructure, ports, and military sites. Russia would likely choose to use a tactical nuclear weapon, which are much less powerful than the bombs used on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, at the end of World War II. Earlier this week, it was reported that CIA Director John Ratcliffe traveled to Moscow for unannounced talks, possibly to warn Kremlin against plans it may have to escalate the conflict. So again, Ukraine escalated the conflict. Ukraine started targeting economic centers and civilian populations. And Russia's comment was, they've opened Pandora's box. They have set the precedent now, so you can't exactly complain when Russia returns the favor, right? And so they are. And so they're bombing, you know, places inside Kiev that have sort of been off limits up until now. And they're going to be causing significant pain to the Ukrainian people in an effort to, you know, bring a close to this never-ending conflict. And so they send Ratcliffe, they send John Ratcliffe to Russia to be like, yeah, we gave Ukraine missiles to bomb your city centers. Yeah, we're, you know, we took the gloves off and we're funding and supplying Ukraine with the very weapons they use to kill your people and make life harder and try to bankrupt Russia. But if you dare to respond, but if you dare to respond in kind, if you dare to give us a taste of our own medicine, we'll bring hell down on you. Now, you got to wonder how Putin is responding to these types of overtures. I wonder if the war in Iran has perhaps lessened the impact of threats like that from the United States. I wonder if that came up in the conversation with John Ratcliffe and Vladimir Putin. I wonder if John Ratcliffe was like, we're warning you, if you do, and Putin is like, how's the Strait of Hormuz? Is that open? Still closed, huh? Can't get that. You can't defeat Iran, huh? You ever looked at a map? You ever looked at a globe, sir? Have you ever looked at perhaps a globe to see something like the size of Russia compared to the size of Iran? I don't think you're in a place to be making threats. Like, I wonder how that went. I do. I wonder how it went. And I have so many videos today that are like 10 minutes long, but they're so good. And I don't know whether to play them or if it's going to be too long. We'll go ahead and start with this one. Clip number 12. The biggest propaganda war of all time. The fighting is real. Everything we've been told about it is basically a lie. This is how the Ukraine war started from a former Delta Force commander, Pete Blaber, or Blabber. He tells Americans the truth about the war in Ukraine. Let's go to clip number 12.
How the Ukraine war started. A bunch of Ivy League, State Department, video. CIA people concocted that thing, made bad decision, senseless decision after senseless decision after senseless decision. And, you know,
can you elaborate? I mean, we have this entire portion towards the end of the interview, but crank it out now.
So the Ukraine war was started by...
You say this is the biggest propaganda war of all time.
Yes, correct? It should be called the propaganda war. The fighting's real. Everything we've been told about it is basically a lie. And every piece of history that shows it's a lie has been either tucked, kicked under the rug or lied about too. So how the war started? The war started when the Obama administration, I don't say U.S. because the Ukraine war could not have started with any other administration, because it couldn't have started without the press as part of the group that was going to provide cover for starting it. And they were all in on the start of the Ukraine war. But the U.S., Obama administration, Victoria Nuland, Jake Sullivan, John O'Brien, and Joe Biden. Joe Biden had one job. You can look in his archives as vice president. It was his one job was Ukraine. And Joe Biden and Jake Sullivan, his deputy, were the architects of the start of the war. And the way it started was the State Department and CIA non-elected officials, along with their counterparts in the EU, Ukrainian politicians, and George Soros's Open Society Foundation, along with the neo-Nazi ultranationalists, created the fake Maidan protests. You can still go online. I checked before I came. Videos are still there, 2014-15. Look at Maidan protests. You'll see brand new GP mediums in the background. You'll see them serving soup. You'll notice that everyone has these same orange hard hats on, distributed to them. The weapons, you'll see, weapons, the same common weapons being held by the ultra-nationalist neo-Nazis. And then there are interviews. There's BBC and German TV interviews with Ukrainian protesters, and in one of them, all the guy does is ask, why are you protesting? And every single individual that they question says the same thing. I'm here because they told me to be here, and I'm getting paid. And so Victoria Nuland admitted afterwards that the U.S. spent $5 billion in USAID funds to bribe all these people and to make it happen. And in February of 2014, the culmination of the Maidan protests was the violent overthrow of the Viktor Yanukovych government, the duly elected government of Ukraine. He was elected not just by Eastern Ukrainians, but by Western Ukrainians. And his election was validated by the UN. But for some reason, they decided, we gotta overthrow him. And the plan, and this is where this senseless decision making comes from. And this is all in cables. It's in State Department, CIA cables, and in—
just for the audience, cables are basically secure emails.
Yes. Good description. It's all in those. They believed that by overthrowing Yanukovych, installing their Ukrainian puppet politicians, and then starting a ethnic war in eastern Ukraine, which is populated by almost 100% ethnic Russians, that by doing that, this would cause so much unrest in Russia that the Russian people would rise up and overthrow Putin. That was the plan. And, you know, when you read that, when you read the cables, when you see that, it's like these, you know, Ivy League, never been in a war, never been in anything real in their life. It's like they were like kids playing with matches, completely unaware of the potential unintended consequences of throwing those matches into a pile of leaves or into something soaked in gas. And what happened afterwards is a classic law of unintended consequences. They had no plan for after they overthrew the government. And in the power vacuum, because they had no plan, the neo-Nazis took over the Ukrainian government.
They had no contingency plans?
No contingencies. And that's why Crimea caught them so by surprise. So you also online, you can go on any of your favorite search engines and just look up Victoria Nuland, Gregory Pyatt. He was the ambassador. She was the head of State Department.
All right. So for our viewers, I mean, this should all be mostly review, but it's a good reminder. You know, here we are in 2026. War started in February of 2022, and it could have been over by like a couple months in. Basically, objectives had been met. There was actually a peace deal on the table. Both sides agreed to it. And then it was Boris Johnson that swooped in, and he's proud of it. He's bragged about it. Like, it's well acknowledged, well publicized. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is what happened. They had in Istanbul a peace agreement that both sides were happy with. And Boris Johnson came in to pressure Zelensky and destroyed the agreement. And so it was destroyed. And so, I mean, the last 3-4 years at this point have just been a senseless bloodletting. This has been a senseless act of carnage with no purpose and with no victory ever in sight. And it's only expanding, and it's only getting worse, and it's only developing further and getting more tenuous life on Earth. Neither Washington nor Moscow commented on the nature of the visit between Ratcliffe and Moscow, but Russia has launched several drones and covert UAVs towards the UK and Europe in recent years. The International Institute for Strategic Studies issued a sobering report in which they found Vladimir Putin's shadow fleet ships sent drones into Britain and Europe, targeting airports, bases, and nuclear sites. So there's already been some covert operations targeting European countries directly. Just to give you some more headlines here, UK will help Ukraine make long-range missiles by sharing classified tech information. So I was one of the latest developments that put the UK in the crosshairs of Russia in a real way. Russia says the UK is playing with fire amid reports CIA chief has warned Kremlin not to attack NATO. Russia said it could retaliate against the UK for its support of Kiev by striking military targets inside and outside Ukraine amid reports that the director of the CIA warned the Kremlin against attacking NATO during a secretive visit this week, while we're simultaneously threatening to leave NATO. So I didn't tell you any of this makes sense. I'm just delivering you the news. Russia has declared war on Britain. We must prepare with the urgency this demands. This is from nationalsecuritynews.com. This week, the Russian embassy in London issued a statement of war against the United Kingdom, responding to reports that British-made drones have been used by Ukraine in long-range strikes against military and industrial targets inside Russia. The embassy declared that London's actions will inevitably carry consequences, and that the deeper Britain's involvement, the higher the price it will pay. Britain, Moscow says, is an accomplice and a co-perpetrator in the defense of Ukraine. Burnham, who's the new British prime minister, accuses Russia of, quote, starting the fire in Ukraine as Moscow ramps up warnings, which, again, is why we played that video that we just played from the Sean Ryan podcast, biggest propaganda war of all time. That was Peter Blaber talking about the source, the ignition, the actual starting of the fire that continues to incinerate world peace. But the question is not just if Putin will target the UK or if Russia will expand its operation to include other NATO targets. It's also the question of whether they'll use nuclear weapons, and will they use nuclear weapons on European targets? It's not out of the question. It would have been if you'd said this a couple years ago that this would seem insane, but the escalation ladder has been slowly but surely climbed. So, like, we're getting to the end game here, unless we can wrestle control of our countries away from these war-hungry psychotics that have driven us to the point of no return. I think we're headed down this path, one way or the other. So here's Vladimir Putin himself saying what his conditions are before he'd be willing to use nuclear weapons. Let's watch. And I'll read along here. He says there are some very clear directions, very clear beacons. This beacon is in the interest of the Russian Federation and its people. This beacon is the interest. If I feel that I'm on this path, you know, I will not stray anywhere from it. Right? Then nothing else interests me at all. Honestly. It's not a nice word, but it doesn't distract me from accomplishing the tasks that I consider most important for my country. That is why, in this regard, as they say, I'm not alone, and all these countries possess this type of weapon, then why should Russia not have it as well? As for this particular topic, it is, of course, very significant, extremely sensitive. But I want to tell you, and I want people to know about this, both here and abroad. After all, our plans for use, I hope this never happens, but the theoretical plans for use, the so-called retaliatory counterstrike response, what does that mean? It means that the decision to use nuclear weapons can only be made if our missile attack warning system has detected not only the launch of missiles, but also provided an accurate prediction and flight trajectories and the time when warheads would land on the territory of the Russian Federation. This is called retaliatory, a counter-strike response. So if someone decides to destroy Russia, then we have the legitimate right to respond. Yes, for humanity, this will be a global catastrophe. For the world, it would be a global catastrophe. But as a Russian citizen and head of the Russian state, then I want to ask this question. Why do we need such a world if there will be no Russia there? So that's Putin laying out his conditions for actually authorizing a nuclear strike. It's not like any of this is new. This is mutually assured destruction. This has been the nuclear policy for America and Russia, then the Soviet Union, since like the 40s. It's just back then, I think people took it seriously. Back then, there was, you know, sort of a constant drumming of the threat of nuclear war. There was a constant, you know, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis. There were the duck and cover, you know, PSAs all the time, which, yeah, that was in part fear propaganda to keep the American people in line and, you know, convince them that they would die if they weren't good little citizens. I get that. At the same time, the threat was real. Maybe not as real as they made it. You know, maybe you wouldn't actually get helped by ducking under your desk, and that was all just a charade to keep it in your mind, sure. But when it comes down to it, there were multiple examples during the Cold War where, like, a Russian submarine got an order to fire a missile and chose not to. And the question is, would that happen again? Would people be as reticent to use it? Would they even be aware of what they were engaging in? If you're being inundated constantly with images of nuclear fallout, nuclear disaster, and the world could end, you know, maybe you take it a lot more seriously. Now everything seems so flippant. It's like, yeah, go to war with Iran. Yeah, we'll start a war in Ukraine. Why not? Killing a million people, who cares? So we're in a weird situation where, like, we are very close to nuclear exchange and nobody seems to care. Europe is driving us towards this reality as quickly as it possibly can, totally regardless of the threat that they're facing and the danger that they're toying with. And I think it's real. I think it's a very real danger. And we can go now to clip 26 here. Russian television animation claims a 100-megaton underwater drone could devastate Britain with a 500-meter radioactive tsunami. So this is on Russian television, what they're showing their people about their military capabilities. Let's watch. It approaches its target at a depth of 1 kilometer, at a speed of 200 kilometers per hour. There's no way to stop this underwater drone. It has a warhead with a capacity of up to 100 megatons. The explosion of this thermonuclear torpedo close to Britain's coast will cause a gigantic tsunami wave up to 500 meters high. The wave also carries extreme doses of radiation. Having passed over Britain, it will turn what is left of them into a radioactive desert, unfit for anything for a long time. So that's the threat from Russia. That's being aired on Russian TV about what their capabilities are and what their strategy might be if they were to find themselves feeling the need to use a nuclear weapon on Britain. They wouldn't have to hit Britain. They wouldn't have to fly a plane over it. There'd be nothing Britain could do to defend itself from the submarine-launched Russian 100-megaton thermonuclear missile. Now, could that also be a bluff? Possibly, but I doubt it. I think it's real. I think they might even do it. I think Russians culturally have a lot more ability to absorb punishment than any Europeans do. And the UK Prime Minister seems to not be taking the threats seriously. Britain has been, quote, hell-bent on pouring oil on a fire and plotting to prevent any kind of peace process, says Dmitry S. Peskov, the Kremlin spokesperson. He said, as Mr. Burnham, the new prime minister of the UK, affirmed his support for Ukraine in a speech and placed red roses at a military cemetery. 35 days into his tenure as prime minister, appears unfazed as he delivers the blueprints for the advanced weaponry that Ukraine is now using to kill Russian civilians. So they're playing with nuclear hellfire, and we're the ones that are going to get burned. So this psychotic cabal must be stopped before they destroy the world.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Keep your hand on your gun.
Welcome back, folks.
Trust anyone. Keep your hand on your gun.
Yes, folks, the testing ground. We call Ukraine the borderlands, the manufactured war, the battlefield in which we can field test our new robotic drones. They now have ground drones. Ground drones have arrived. Just saw this during the break from Visegrad 24. A Ukrainian ground drone has killed 20 Russian soldiers after rolling into a bunker where they were hiding and opening fire with its M2 Browning heavy machine gun. The attack was carried out by the 44th Separate Mechanized Brigade with the help of a droid at TW-12.7 built by Ukraine. And yeah, they look like little go-karts with machine guns mounted on them. So this is what usually happens throughout history. You have something like the Spanish Civil War prior to World War II. You get a little testing phase. You get to go try out your new technology. At that point, it was, you know, the advanced military aircraft and bombing strategies. Ukraine deploys rifle-armed ground robots for combat testing. Apparently now they've been rolled out on the battlefield, killing 20 Russians with an automated drone fuselage, or whatever you call it. It's great. Prior to World War I, there was the Russo-Japanese War, where a lot of the new battlefield tactics were tested out, and we told you when the Ukraine war first started, that's what it seems like is happening here. But it continues on and on and on. So Burnham, the new UK prime minister, accused Russia of starting the fire in Ukraine as Moscow ramps up warnings. And just go over some of the videos we have here. We won't go to them, but Moscow tells Britain and France their military sites can be hit beyond Ukraine. The same day, Trump says Putin will not touch NATO. Russia accuses France, Germany, and Britain of continuing to fuel the conflict in Ukraine. Quote, we may respond by striking British military targets. Moscow is threatened and warned to retaliate against London by striking British military targets in Ukraine and abroad in Britain itself. Moscow is now saying it could target military British facilities. The Russian foreign minister spokesperson Maria Zarkova said that if the country is hit with British-made weaponry, it could target UK facilities in Ukraine or beyond its borders. Victor Boot said that the CIA director came to Moscow. Quote, Ukraine is on its last legs in the infrastructure war. There are no interceptors left to defend Kiev. Ukraine has already lost and now only has two choices, either sign a peace deal now or face full surrender later. Or expand the war out to nuclear conflict with all of Europe. I guess there's a third option. There is a third option, which is as you're drowning, reach out and pull the rest of the civilized world down with you. So there is that. You know, I had a story earlier this week. Apparently Botswana, the government of Botswana has like warnings for its citizens. Like if you're going to Russia, don't get tricked into joining their army. Apparently Russia is, and this is rumor, but this is what the Botswanan government is saying, is that Russian companies are claiming they're hiring people from Botswana, and then the people from Botswana just get put into the military and sent to the front lines, which this tells you how satanic this whole war is. That's better than what Ukraine is doing. It's actually more moral, more morally defensible to be recruiting soldiers straight out of Botswana to fight for Russia on the front lines than it is to do what Ukraine's doing, which is taking Ukrainian fathers off the street, sending them to die in the front line, and then replacing them in Ukraine with a Botswanan soldier. Like, it's a toss-up in a lot of ways. I mean, they're both just horrifically evil, but I think killing your own people and replacing them with Africans is actually worse than just, like, recruiting Africans to fight for you. That's how America, that's how the Union won the Civil War, right? Putting Irishmen on the front lines as soon as they arrive. And there's videos in Ukraine, like, you know, young man, 18 years old, literally weeping, saying, I don't want to die as he's being sent to the front line. Another video of a guy in a troop transport, literally handcuffed in because they don't want him to desert and they have such a problem with desertion. Meanwhile, impressment gangs are running around Ukraine, scooping up fathers and sending them off to war. And you have to wonder, you know, James Tallarico this week made this big, you know, sob story about a 5-year-old that was arrested by ICE, or that was detained by ICE or whatever, was deported actually by ICE. Of course, the actual story is that the kid's dad is an illegal alien. They sent the dad back and the dad said, I want to take my child with me back to Mexico, where I'm from. So it's like, oh, boo-hoo. Oh, boo-hoo, you know? Yeah, I bet it is confusing for the 5-year-old. It was kind of mean for his parents to do that to him. Kind of a, you know, horrible thing to put your kid in a situation where at any moment, you know, they could be separated from you forever because you refuse to just follow the simple laws that allow you into the country legally. You wouldn't do that. So now your kid is having to suffer because their dad is a criminal who doesn't follow the law and put them in the situation. So, yeah, sucks for him. But we got to wonder, why do they feel more for the illegal alien that's here putting his kid in public school, expecting us to pay for it, just getting literally sent back to Mexico, just back home, back where he's from, back where he lived his entire life until the last 3 years when he came here? That is supposed to be the biggest evil we've ever heard. We're supposed to be outraged at that. Meanwhile, in Ukraine, you've got story after story of little kid, little 5-year-old kid being walked by his father to school when the press gang shows up. When the recruitment van turns the corner, they grab the kid's father. The kid doesn't even make it to school. He's left there standing on the street while his father is literally kidnapped, bundled into a van and sent to the front lines to be fodder for some drone. Why? I guess is the end of the question, actually. Why? Why are we allowing this? Why are we supporting this? And why are even the people here in America, supposedly capable of empathy for the most outrageous criminal you've ever met, they for some reason can't some of the empathy for the Ukrainian people who have been slated for deletion because of big bad Russia. The Democrats love this. I mean, what are you, a Russian agent saying that you want Ukraine to stop kidnapping their people? ICE does not separate families, Mullen wrote. Parents are asked if they want to be removed with their children, or ICE will place the children with a safe person the parent designates. In this case, both the father and the son were deported together. Mullen notes that the parents are responsible for what happened to their children, just as any U.S. citizen parent who breaks the law is when they're arrested. Yeah, it's just really not that complicated. That's just basic law enforcement, but we're supposed to treat that like the, you know, sickest evil ever. Meanwhile, they're all in favor of the actual thing happening, people actually being kidnapped, children actually watching their parents be disappeared by their own government, only it's the hero Zelensky, the champion of democracy, that's doing it. In the aftermath of the CIA director's visit to Moscow, Russia's mysterious Doomsday Radio started transmitting 9 more words. Some say this is part of Russia's dead hand nuclear strike system or a comm system with far off foreign agents. Nobody knows, but it is certainly mysterious stuff. Moscow, of course, is burning as a large fire in Moscow erupts with thick flames and smoke rising over the Russian capital after a major Ukrainian drone attack against a Russia oil processing facility. UK warned Russia could target British drone factories, of course. And then this was today, clip number 21 here. Massive detonation at Ukrainian ammunition depot in Kiev Oblast following Russian strikes on the object this evening. Judging by the visuals of the blast, it appears it was a strike on storage of surface-to-air missiles. And you can see from very far away, and then we have a closer shot on clip 20 we can go to. A different view of the massive detonation of what is reported to be a military ammunition storage depot there in the Kiev Oblast. So again, you know, we're running headlong towards this utterly pointless and senseless war for which we gain absolutely nothing. And yet we started it, we are perpetuating it, and even now, on the cusp of nuclear exchange, mutually assured destruction, we are still driving heedlessly headlong towards the final play. And, you know, I wasn't even sure if I was going to play this video, but maybe it's appropriate to play it on on the back of the video we just saw about Russia possibly using a tsunami weapon, using a nuclear weapon underwater to cause a massive tsunami over all of the UK. I think that would be pretty effective. After all, we just saw the floods in Nepal, beyond devastating, hard to even fathom what happened there. Here's the Poseidon unmanned underwater vehicle, which can just be persistent, underwater, hidden, autonomous, nuclear powered, just cruising along under the water forever, waiting for the signal to destroy. So we can just like, can we just do trade instead? How about we just like do some trade instead? How about like, anyway, it's obviously not going to happen. I think Russia is working with America and Israel to destroy Europe. I think they're all in it together. And I don't think it's helped by the fact that the European leadership hates their own people and is committing suicide on their behalf. Let's go to clip 25 here, because this is a breakdown of exactly how the flood in Nepal happened. I think it's interesting just on the face of it. The destruction is really unlike anything I've ever seen before. The way this worked out, I mean, it's straight up like a Hollywood movie. So much so that I can't help but have the little conspiracy theorist in the back of my head going, this was a test. I don't know what they were testing exactly, but I feel like this wasn't natural. It feels almost too perfect for this to be a natural thing to have happened. I'll show you the explanation of how they say it happened here, and I have no proof or even a speculation as to what they would be testing or why they would do this, but when I see the threat of Russia to use a tsunami to overwhelm Britain, I can see why, because water is an incredibly dangerous force when unleashed with its full fury. Let's go to clip 25 here. This is how the floods in Nepal destroyed something like 100,000 homes. Let's watch.
This amateur footage shows the true scale of the massive wave of water and mud that devastated Nepal. Entire houses swallowed up. And you can see, at the bottom of the screen, people running for their lives. We were able to geolocate this video, and thanks to satellite imagery, we determined that in this village, the riverbed widened by at least 300 metres. It all began at this glacier in northern Nepal, close to the Chinese border. These satellite images show an entire section of the glacier collapsing. As it fell, it triggered a magnitude 5.2 tremor. Scientists are still trying to put together the precise sequence of events, but the detached ice mixed with rock, water and soil created what's known as a debris flow. About 20 kilometres downstream, this border crossing between China and Nepal was hit 7 minutes later. The water swept everything away at a speed of about 150 kilometres per hour. A little further down, these workers had only seconds to scramble to higher ground. The wave was powerful enough to surge up the mountainside. It then continued on toward the village of Betrawati. And next was the town of Trishuli. There, residents were at first in shock, then in panic, as a bridge was swept away in an instant, water seeming to come from every direction. By this point, the wave had already torn through more than 80 kilometres, and it still wasn't finished. Further downstream, the water spread out and slowed, but still had enough force to roll over this massive boulder. And the disaster may still not be over. Debris carried by the wave has formed a lake covering 110,000 square metres, which, according to Chinese authorities, has started to overflow.
It's just absolutely devastating. Disaster experts say Nepal glacier collapse was difficult to predict, given the challenges in forecasting and detecting such calamities. Researchers advised banning construction on floodplains and marking out clear evacuation routes. Well, easier said than done, and I'm not even sure if clear evacuation. I mean, the craziest thing is that it was sunny when it happened. I mean, that must have been insane to experience, honestly. You know, you can almost understand if it's raining hard and it starts to flood, but you're just like out in your garden on a sunny day and suddenly a 100-foot-tall wall of water comes crashing around the corner. How do you warn people about that? How do you even handle a situation like that? Just a little reminder of how tenuous our grip on this planet truly is. Now, like I said, I have so many incredible other videos to get to today. I mean, that one was mind-blowing, but not in a positive way. And I want to talk about what's happening in Ceuta here in just a second. We have some very fascinating video out of that circumstance I'm excited to show you. I do want to remind you to support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com, your one-stop shop for truth, justice, and the American way. We have incredible shirts, t-shirts, hats, merchandise. And just shop there knowing that what you're getting is going to be the best possible product we can offer at the best possible price that we can give it to you at. And it supports this broadcast. It is a true 360 win, or as I like to say, it's like a 1080 backflip win. It's actually, you're winning in every possible regard, especially if you're a VIP member. You get the $10 to spend every month on the store. It's an additional discount to everything else at thealexjonesstore.com/VIP. And of course, you can go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. And like I said, I mean, I guess I'm sort of the target market for the stuff that we offer, but I do love all of it. But I do like the hats are awesome. The shirts are awesome, but also the supplements are, they really are incredible. We really do take them ourselves. And we now are offering the Green Gummies Superfood for Kids with paraprobiotics. And it has 100% of the daily value you need of vitamin A, C, D3, E, B5, B6, B9, B7, B12, iodine, 50% zinc, manganese is 50%, 3% magnesium, just a touch of sodium. they taste amazing. These really taste good. I'll have you know right now. And if you have kids, they will enthusiastically enjoy eating their vitamins if you get the green gummies for kids at thealexjonesstore.com. 21 organic fruits, vegetables, and superfoods with all of the best parts isolated, extracted, and put in a delicious gummy form. There's like 4 gummy bears for each little pack. The packs are super easy to throw in the kids' lunchbox or just put in your pocket or your day bag. And it's not just for kids either. These are amazing for adults as well. So get it now while you can, thealexjonesstore.com. And until Sunday or until we run out, you get a bottle of Shilajit gummies absolutely free in your order. So whatever you order, hat, t-shirt, supplements, you get a bottle of Shilajit gummies because we're so confident that you will like them that we think you'll come back for more. So you get a full bottle absolutely free. It's like a month's supply. And when that month's up, we trust that you'll be looking at that empty bottle going, well, I better get some more because what am I going to do without these? Because how am I going to go on without these? It's like I said, y'all remember when we first moved over to this studio and I was like, for like a week, I was like, I don't know what's going on. I'm not at the top of my game. Maybe it's a new studio. Maybe it's just the vibe. I don't know what it is. And I realized because at the old studio, I had all of my supplements right there and I took them every day. And then I got out of that habit. And so it's not even like a placebo effect because I wasn't thinking about that, but I just noticed like, man, I don't have energy these days. I'm like, I'm just not playing my best these days. And I realized it was because, I stopped taking the supplements every day. So I'm back on the wagon. So you'll experience that as well if you take our supplements. Because some of the effects can be a little bit subtle, you know. Not all of them give you the kick in the pants, but some of them do. Like methylene blue, you're going to feel. Regardless, you're going to feel that. Methylene red, I'd say, is the same way. Some things are a little bit more subtle. But like if you take them regularly and then you stop taking them, you will certainly notice. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Now I want to go to this video. This is from, well, it's posted by Night Nation, not Real Night Nation, but it is a TikToker, I believe, who calls herself Zoomer Woman. Zoomer Woman is a genius. She's 100% correct on how we go about this. We need to do exactly what she's describing. So she's basically just describing how to argue with leftists and how to broach these topics or just present yourself in these political discussions, circumstances where you find yourself having to talk to a leftist or try to convince a leftist or something like that. I think she's exactly right. And this is the vibe I try to put off as well. I think we're perfectly aligned on this because I always try to reframe the argument to understand like who's the victim, who's the perpetrator here, right? Or just approach things from a objective point of view and just go like the 5-year-old kid being expelled from the country. You will literally have people crying and just being like, I can't believe, because they're picturing like their kid going into kindergarten on the first day and then like a big officer like ripping him by the back of the shirt and tearing away, and they're like crying over this. But it's like his father committed a crime. That was the guy who did the thing. You should be mad at him if you're really all upset about this. Then why aren't you asking what the hell's wrong with that father who puts a kid in that situation? Put your ire where it belongs and just don't for a second try to approach the topic on their terms, right? And even, you know, a lot of people on the right sort of go too far the other way where, you know, it'll be like, good, F that 5-year-old. It's like, no, I feel bad for that 5-year-old. His dad's a jackass. It's his dad's fault that this happened. I do feel bad for him. I do understand what it would be like the first day of kindergarten getting sent to a different country. That sucks, man. Stupid dad, stupid father doing that to his kid. What an irresponsible scumbag. I'm glad he's not in our country anymore. And I'm glad the kid's going to be around people that are like him, that his family grew up with, and that he can have his own country called Mexico where he can live forever. And that's amazing and not even a punishment. So there you go. Here's a Zoomer Woman, clip number 2, talking about how to just not argue on the ground the leftist designed. Let's watch.
How do we convert normal people to the alt-right? There seems to be this false dichotomy where people believe it's either crude, hateful slurs and banner drops, or this debate bro semantics game, which I touched on in a previous video. My strategy is called shoving their face in it. We need to weaponize human psychology like the left did. The left didn't win over the masses with word games. They didn't win debates. They gave people titties on TV, contraception, and free money. But we don't stand for those things, so instead we can use fear. I've turned left-wing women in my life against these protected groups they used to worship. Play into the conscientiousness of the average white person. One of my favorite techniques when confronting a normie is to say, look what you did. This one breaks them. Leave the usual gotcha of, oh, you support this? Literally say, you did this. This is your fault. Use examples that are connected to extremely taboo topics, like pedophilia or violence against women. They do not want to be associated with that stuff. Force it in their face. Be very aggressive. I've actually had people break down into a panic attack in front of me, hyperventilating and sobbing, because you're destroying their ego and sense of self. That apparently is only rooted in some broad notion of being a good person. Like when a brown clown migrant rapes a young girl, you need to make the leftist woman feel like she's responsible. You need to rip these people apart, screw them up so much, literally scramble their brains so that their entire ideology collapses and the scales are removed from their eyes. That is what the algorithm is doing right now, and that is why we are suddenly winning. The fear circuitry in their brains are being triggered every time they scroll. They're sitting there scrolling on Reels, travel edit, meme, Irina Zarudska getting stabbed in the neck. This dopamine fear cycle is the same kind of brainwashing that happens in an abusive relationship. But in this case, it's fine because it's literally deprogramming people. The other two strategies, the debate style and the angry, hateful style, come from a place of empathy. You are trying to put yourself in the shoes of an NPC. The hardline racist projects the anger he's feeling onto a normie who doesn't care about anything aside from football and beer. While the debate bro is thinking, well, these are the things that would convince me. Meanwhile, the average person doesn't think logically and they're not persuaded by facts. My husband told me that empathy is a delusion. You can never put yourself in someone else's shoes. So instead, I look sympathetically and objectively at the average person and I see someone very rooted in their most primal desires. People who would rather not think much about anything at all. They respond very strongly to three forms of stimuli. Sex, validation, and fear. Our best shot is to work with the algorithm in leveraging that.
These are the tactics of the InfoWar. That was Sun Tzu herself telling you how to win the information war. This is the battlefield we're playing on, folks. And if they can't understand logical arguments, just hit them where it hurts. Hit them with the emotional appeal, because we're actually on the right side of that also.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All the online right are rejoicing with the supposed death of what is being called Woke 1.0. At long last, people, even on the left, are finally admitting that the 2010s were complete insanity. Finally, we can answer questions like, what is a woman, without having a circular definition. Finally, we can admit that putting men in combat sports against women is not wise. Men are now allowed to part their legs when they sit down, free from judgment. No more Zer Zem pronouns. No more drag queen story hours. We have the entire right celebrating, we have the left playfully reflecting on their past convictions, and we even have the LGB telling the T to be normal. Ironic. So, did we do it? Did we win the culture war? No. Actually, this is a sign of the right's defeat. Something that many, including myself, warned would happen if things continued the way they were going. And in this video, I go over why that is and the actual political drive behind Woke 1.0's death. And if you enjoyed, consider subscribing. It helps the channel. I said in one of my earliest videos that a right-wing revolution was inevitable. By right-wing here, I actually mean anti-woke. My reasoning was as follows. With the left's mass importation of peoples from the third world, who, by themselves, tend to be very hostile to woke ideology, the liberals signed their own death warrant. The woke left somehow believed that these people, known for their tribalism and religious extremism, would perfectly parrot the liberal worldview. They didn't, as should have been obvious. This means that as the third world population grows in the West and becomes a decisive voter bloc, they would turn on the woke liberals who enabled them and try to impose their own worldview. As, by the way, has already happened in several cities and states. We're in a situation where many Western European countries will become minority European within only 1 to 3 generations, with most capitals already undergoing that switch. America has just a bit longer. On screen, you're seeing some of the statistics on this, caused by a mix of low fertility among locals due to both cultural factors and economic policy, and the unrelenting immigration numbers, as well as the high fertility among foreigners due to their own distinct culture, and being the beneficiaries of the West's disastrous welfare policies. Therefore, if things continue as is, the West will be remade in the third world's image within the coming decades. Naturally, that means there are only 2 broad political positions that still matter. Either A, the third world, or B, the dissident right, who oppose their presence and the current establishment that enabled their mass importation. Everything else is secondary until this is resolved. And regardless of who would win in such a situation, they will be anti-woke. Given these options, where does that leave the left? The average woke leftist has 3 paths laid before them. Path 1, they can stay woke. They don't recant their beliefs, they continue to push LGBT, neo-pronouns, feminism, etc. unapologetically. Force it in schools, at the workplace, in movies, desperately trying to spread propaganda with every institution they still control to see if their numbers can grow enough. But they won't. And they'll start losing more and more to non-woke leftists or right-wingers until they become irrelevant. And when the power struggle between the dissident right and the third world really begins, they'll be the first to be gotten rid of, effectively making this option an act of self-destruction. That's always been the woke leftist's specialty, so maybe they might go with it. Path 2. They become based. A niche but increasingly common option these days, a lot of woke leftists have attempted to rehabilitate themselves, dropping their pro-immigration stance and some of their more insane cultural values, and then replacing it with nationalism. The combination of their economic policies with their newfound nationalism makes them oddly and perhaps deliberately similar to certain 20th century ideologies. It's rare because so much of leftist programming is about abhorring those certain 20th century ideologies, but it does happen. Generally, these people are treated by the dissident right with suspicion. But they can't afford to be picky with their allies. So the dissident right tolerates these based leftists, despite many believing that socialist policies are still innately subversive. Nationalism, however, remains non-negotiable.
So this is a super interesting video, super interesting breakdown by Basic Logic. Follow them on X at Basic Logic IQ. That's Basic Logic IQ. The video goes on for another 3 minutes. Maybe we'll pick it up right there on the other side, because I think he's right. I think he's pretty much right. and is their interpretation. So we'll pick that up on the other side. That's Basic Logic IQ on X, Why the Left Abandoned Woke Point 1.0, rather.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Same version of wokeness that puts less emphasis on cultural causes like the LGBT while maintaining the same economic policy and pro-immigration stance. That's the main difference between the previous option and this one. The previous option is loyal to their own nation and wants to bring about their supposed socialist utopia for their own people, recognizing that unlimited immigration makes the welfare state unsustainable. Meanwhile, this option is still globalist. Effectively, it's attempting to signal to the Third World faction that the left are their allies and that they're willing to abandon the positions that the Third World doesn't like. When people saw leftists admitting the death of Woke 1.0 and calling it crazy, they thought that the right won the culture war. That is false. The Third World won the culture war, not the right. And what does the Third World faction actually want? It's varied because they're not homogenous. But they have enough aligned interests to be considered one political bloc for the time being. They want more immigration to continue so that they can continue to bring over their communities. They want more state welfare for them, more public housing, more gifts from the national treasury. After all, it's not their money they're taking to pay for these amenities, it's the locals' taxes. Their own tax contribution is often net negative. The Third World also wants to be able to enforce their own rules in their communities, free from outside interference. Which is why leftist politicians placate them by having two-tiered law enforcement and judges that are significantly more lenient with them than the locals. They want to see more of their own in positions of power and authority. And lastly, they don't want to see LGBT flags or pride parades or anything of that sort. Which is why leftist politicians have been so keen on no longer bringing that stuff up. The modern-day leftist campaign strategy for any place that has a large immigrant population is to simply put a foreigner from their ethnicity as the candidate and just promise all sorts of free stuff paid for by the taxpayer. That way, they get the left-wing vote and the immigrant vote, which is usually able to win any urban election. And all it costs them is having to not bring up the principles they've been championing for half a century. But understand, for many, this was the plan all along. The leftist leaders knew this would happen when they imported the Third World. I find the alternative hard to believe, that some of the most powerful people on the planet were completely ignorant and blindsided by the Third World's values. In truth, there was no culture war in the 2010s. There was a culture faint. While we were too distracted trying to argue what a woman is or the fact that men shouldn't be competing against them in sports, one of the largest and most consequential demographic changes in history was taking place. And people were too busy seeing it as just one of a myriad of issues. This was a war won without a fight. And notice how naturally the champions of the 2010s wokeness have abandoned their causes, the ease with which they call their former positions crazy. Leftist politicians didn't stop being woke 1.0, they never were. They simply took on the facade that would get them elected and their agenda pushed, because that's what a politician is. And their voters should have been aware. The woke crowd is no longer as relevant as it used to be, and a new demographic of voters have taken over their role as the base of leftist political support. The liberal, then, was just a useful stepping stone in pursuit of this outcome. Now, his job is done, and his services are no longer required.
And he closes it out with a quote from Yuri Bezmenov. So again, that was Basic Logic IQ on X. Basic Logic is the user, the screen name at Basic Logic IQ. Why did the left abandon Woke Point One? And I, you know, I've got a little bit of qualms about what he said. Like, I don't think, you know, when he says the politicians weren't actually woke, that was just a way to get power. There's certainly some truth to that, and it depends on who you're talking about, but I think they are still woke. I mean, I just think that actually the deception is happening now when they understand that it's unpopular, they don't want to push it as hard, or you maintain the lie until you get what you want, and then you can just abandon the lie, right? So it's not the lie that they were actually interested in this stuff. It's just like they wanted the police defunded. It got defunded, so they don't have to push that anymore. And all of the negative consequences from that happening is now an embarrassment, so they'd rather just not bring it up and pretend like it never happened, or pretend it was misinterpreted and not intended to be that way. But it was all, I mean, they did it on purpose. They meant for it to happen. It happened. And now same thing's happening with the left is what happened with the COVID pushers. It's the same thing. They will not acknowledge that it was a bad idea to lock down the country. Like, they just won't acknowledge it, but they're also not like arguing about it. Like, it happened. It happened. It was their idea. It turned out terrible, and they don't want to talk about it anymore. But they believed it at the time. And if it happened again, they'd probably do it again. They haven't learned a lesson or anything. But I do think his overall point about the fact that woke was in a lot of ways a feint and that allowed the third world to arrive. The problem is, just like so many things, the distraction is real. The thing that's distracting you is also real. So, you know, he says, like, we were distracted over culture war issues like transgenderism, men and women's sports, and that allowed, you know, that distracted us while the third world was coming in. But it's like, yeah, but also some of us have daughters that are very good athletes and don't want to see their, you know, spot in a high levels, competitive format be stolen by some dude in a dress. So it's real. So you got to actually contend with that. You can't just go, well, that's fine. We have to focus on this one thing. The migrants, the only thing that matter. That's not really how it works. How it should work is the first time somebody's like, can a man play in a lady's sports? It's just be the entire society like, no. And then just get on to like what's actually happening. For some reason, we can't do that. We can never just, like, accept the obvious response. We have to go through years of trial and error before we all arrive at what was obvious from the beginning. Like I said, I've got other videos that, like, help explain this stuff really well, but I think what we'll do now is go to clip number one here. Won't be able to play the whole thing, but this is exactly the conflict that short film was describing. This is Bill Maher arguing with Howie Mandel and his daughter. So this is like three, you know, progressives arguing about woke, about where it goes from here and what this was all about. This was posted by Tennessee Haller at the TN Haller. What's the difference between privilege and advantage? Bill Maher struggles to explain to Howie Mandel's daughter why he refuses to acknowledge white privilege and calls it an advantage instead. He also knows Gen Z claims not to believe in all of this crap. So let's watch clip number one here, and we'll pause and comment as it goes.
But there is so much craziness on the left.
And it's just craziness everywhere.
Yes, there
is. In our world.
But there didn't used to be this much, not nearly, on the left. Nobody was talking about abolishing the police or getting rid of penises or whatever they're doing these days.
Right.
5 years ago. Things changed a lot in the last 5 years.
What changed it? What do you think it was that changed
Gen Z.
You have a problem with Gen Z.
Well, we used to
have a problem with bad ideas. I don't have a problem
with
that.
But there's always been bad ideas.
Or just differing ideas.
Well, let's discuss them and see what's different and what's just bad.
Well, you say Gen Z, because that's interesting.
What about abolishing the police? Is that just a different idea or is that a bad idea?
But was there...
Well, let her answer the question, counselor. Is that a different idea or is that a bad idea?
I think it was misunderstood.
Misunderstood?
Defunding the police you're talking about, right?
Let's pause it. You see, they're like not ready. They're actually not ready to have this conversation. They're not ready to actually delve into this stuff. They're not ready to acknowledge the excesses of the left. They're not ready to admit that it was all crazy. The only thing they're willing to do is say, well, it was misinterpreted. No, it wasn't. What are you talking about? It's called defund the police, and you wanted to defund the police. Now, there's a scale of defunding, but obviously the goal was total defunding and abolishing the police. I mean, these two things were announced sort of hand in hand. And I remember in 2020 marveling, genuinely being in awe of the fact that this utterly retarded talking point that made no sense, that is just on the face of it, an insane thing to push that nobody had ever heard of before. And in like 2 weeks, they not only had a giant nationwide movement to do this, they were passing laws. They were actually abolishing the police. They actually took away like $50 million from the cops here in Austin. Like, they were doing it. So you almost have to marvel at the left's ability to come up with a batshit retarded idea and have every one of their supporters adopt it wholeheartedly, immediately, and push it aggressively everywhere, only for it to inevitably and obviously fail and be a horrible idea, only to 6 years later pretend like it never happened, or pretend like it was an accident, or they never said it, or it was misinterpreted. You almost have to admire the stranglehold they have over the minds of their followers. I've said it so many times, but like 1984, when I first read it, I thought it was overblown. I didn't think people were really like this. I thought, okay, you can trick some people some of the time, but you can't just have everybody go along with a retarded idea and everybody just, as soon as it fails, they all turn around and forget they ever supported. But like, we're living through that as we speak. But even, you know, the first sentence I wanted to interrupt, I let it play for a little longer, but it's this classic, well, the left is crazy. Well, both sides are crazy. Really? Really? And of course, Bill Maher's like, well, yeah, of course. Can you point to a right-wing position that's crazy? Is the border wall a crazy idea? Is deporting illegal immigrants some sort of, is it at all equivalent, even remotely in the same ballpark as defunding the police? Are they not at this moment trying to defund and eradicate ICE? Are they not passing laws to stop ICE from wearing masks so they can be identified and their identities can be handed over to leftist activists so their families can be targeted? The insanity is not even diminished. Like, it hasn't gone away at all. It's still just as strong as ever. They just already got what they wanted from defund the police. They got what they wanted from Black Lives Matter. It's not that they've realized those were bad ideas. Those ideas were enacted, so now they're moving on to different, worse ideas. So let's go back to the progressives trying to argue with their own consciousness and memory about what they themselves were involved in, trying to rationalize why such utterly terrible ideas were so ubiquitously accepted by their political party and still continue to be. Let's watch.
I don't think that defunding the police was abolishing the police, and I think
they're
it was
two different things. Two different things.
I don't believe in abolishing the police. I believe in defunding.
Okay, so bad idea.
Them. I believe in defunding.
So that's a bad idea.
But I've never heard abolish the police.
I haven't either.
Well, I follow.
Well, we just
the
showed
news.
All the signs.
That's my job.
Do you not think defunding the police was misunderstood or misinterpreted?
Well, I think it was a terrible phrasing of it. If you were talking about reallocating funds,
yes,
and a different kind of police training. I mean, I've said things about the police over the years nobody has ever said on television that they weren't very happy about. So it's not like the police doesn't need reform. I get that. But you do need police.
We do.
I don't blame a lot of them for saying, you know, what happened to George Floyd was horrendous. I didn't do it. This idea, another bad idea, more prevalent in the younger generations, about collective guilt. I don't believe in collective guilt of any kind.
They're all concerned about the innocent civilians that have been collectively punished and murdered, largely children and women.
Of course.
And are you at all concerned about the fact that the International Criminal Court just today issued a subpoena for Bibi Netanyahu?
Well, that's ridiculous, but it's a war.
Why?
It's a war. Because it's a war and they were attacked and they're defending themselves.
I'm an individual. I'll take responsibility for what I do or what I've done. I don't like the term privilege. I think it's used way too much. I certainly understand why some struggling coal miner, when he hears some rich white kid talk about privilege. It's obnoxious.
But we do, you will acknowledge the fact that you and I have white privilege.
I will not. I will call it advantage. Have I had advantages for being white?
I'm sure I have. This semantic game, let's pause it here, and this is an important part, because Howie Mandel brings up a very stupid but often repeated example of white privilege. But saying advantage, it's the same thing. No, the problem here is that you're ascribing, what is this, small Missouri town votes to abolish police department turns Carroll County Sheriff. Again, we saw all the signs. I mean, the abolishing the police, defunding the police, it is the same thing. How do you think the police are going to work if they're not abolished? And we said from the beginning, and again, it's obvious, defunding the police is not actually going to eliminate the police. It really just means, translate defund the police, what it means is privatize the police, federalize the police. That's what it actually means. Roboticize the police, I guess would be another way of putting it. White advantage, is that what he called it? I had advantages. It's the same thing. This is semantic. Advantage, privilege, it basically means the same thing. What's the issue? So you still think that in a white country, in a country that is founded by and occupied by almost entirely or the majority white people, that that's bad? That it's bad that you're, that you might benefit in some way from everybody looking, acting, being culturally similar to you? It's not a privilege. It's not an advantage. It's the reality of living amongst your own people. Like, what are you talking about? In China, it's Chinese privilege. In France, it's French privilege. In Africa, it'll be African privilege. It's not privilege. It's just you're in a country that is occupied by your own people. The whole idea, you're literally trying to demonize a race for existing. That's the problem. Whether you call it a privilege or an advantage, you're still trying to saddle a population with guilt over simply existing in a place that their ancestors created. And maybe, you know, I guess the question is, what's the problem with privilege? I privilege my kids over other kids. My kids have a privilege, have lots of privileges with me that other kids wouldn't have. I wouldn't put up with other kids because they're my kids. Am I a bad person for privileging my kids? My kids have the privilege of being read books every night before they go to bed. Should I not do that because some bad parent puts an iPad in front of their kid? See, my kid's advantaged because they're going to be smarter than those other kids. They're going to do better because I am instructing them more than other kids are being instructed. Is that bad? Is that a bad thing is the question. Is it bad to give advantages to people you love or people that are in your family or in your race, which is just an extended family? Or is it in fact not just okay, but great to be white and great to have familial loyalty to people that are closely related to you? But let's go. Let's hear the example, and I'm sure you can guess what it is. The glaring example that doesn't exist and isn't real of quote-unquote white privilege in this country. I bet you already know what they're going to say. Let's watch.
What's the difference between privilege and advantage to you?
Can I explain?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Advantage means, like, when I was starting out in the early 80s when we were comics, could there have been a moment I was up against a black comic to get a job at Chuckle Hut in Cleveland? Owner said, okay, let's go with the white guy. We'll probably do a little more ticket sales on Saturday night. I mean, this is 1980 after all.
Right.
That could have happened. Absolutely.
And that's not
that would
privilege?
Well, it's an advantage. It's not a privilege to
see, but that's the problem in today's society. A word, and even why we're getting canceled, it's perception over content. So the perception of privilege to you is different than the perception of advantage. The advantage is when you are a white guy and you are pulled over in the middle of the night and,
yes, it's an advantage.
And I have the privilege of just not having to worry about being, you know, my friends who are.
Well, that's not true either.
What?
I mean, how many people do you think the police shoot a year?
I don't know.
See? So you're talking out of your ass.
Well, tell me.
1,000. They shoot about 1,000 people a year.
Okay. And?
How many of that is are white people?
Tell me.
So, again, we're having this discussion,
no, but
you're so sure of yourself, you don't even know the stats.
But why does that stat
Because you're
me?
Talking about what you're talking about, how much you have to worry. I'm
not
saying,
I have to worry. My friends who are black, who are married and raising kids.
Right.
My personal experience. When I took my kids out and they got their driver's license, I was worried about them driving safely. And
right.
Those are the discussions I had.
Absolutely.
Don't speed and don't take somebody. My black friends have to have an added discussion.
I agree.
That I've never had with
Absolutely.
My kids. If you get pulled over by the cop, make sure that your hands are there.
Right.
Don't reach for anything.
Okay.
So isn't that privilege?
Okay. Again, let's not talk about
let's pause it. So that, you know, it's the classic thing they bring up. Oh, black kids have to have the talk about not attacking cops or something. It's like, first of all, did you not tell your child how to handle it when you got pulled over? It's the instruction is the same for literally everyone. And you probably should have told your daughter she was getting her car and driving by herself for the first time. You should have said, hey, if you get pulled over, here's how you do it. You put on your blinker, you find a safe spot to pull to the side, you keep your hands on the wheel, and you don't give them an excuse to suspect you of something. Who doesn't tell their kid that? Like, who doesn't learn that? That is not a black thing. What are you talking about? This is what I mean. It's like the privilege is what? That you don't have to tell your kid how to behave in front of the cops? Yes, you do. What are you talking about? Unless they just know how to behave, in which case the privilege is you're raising a human being who knows how to behave in civilization and respects authority. Is that a privilege? Is that a privilege you enjoy? So this is what I mean. Now, Bill Maher, to his credit, goes on to basically say, you know, only 28 of the 1,000 people were black or 28% of the people shot were black, but that's still twice as much as their number. But he says, you know, they interact with black people a lot more often than white people. So those things are skewed. So Bill Maher, at least, like, you know, he's sort of the most frustrating person because he's like so close to just being a right winger, just being correct about stuff, but he like can't let himself do it. Like, he gets that the privilege discussion is bonkers and he doesn't want to entertain it, so he tries to come up with another word that like fits his conscience better, but it's because he's afraid to move away from that very comfortable position as a center-left moderate that he occupies, where you still have to pay lip service to some of these crazy ideas that inspire the crazy slogans that get the crazy policy put in place that makes life worse for everybody. He gets to both criticize it and indulge in it at the same time. Very comfortable position for him. But at least he's better than the other people that are saying the Defund the Police program was misinterpreted. What was it supposed to mean? Let's see. There's three words. Defund. I understand what that means. That's just a word that goes with the police, and I know who they are. So you want to take the money from the police. You're destroying the police. Like, it's not that complicated. How do you even misinterpret that? The game that they play is they go, we want to defund the police. And you go, that sounds crazy. We need police. And they go, you don't understand. When we say defund the police, we mean we need to reallocate resources to mental health facilities so that dangerous situations aren't da da da. And it's like, okay, well, that is still kind of stupid. I still don't agree, but like, okay. And then they just actually defund the police. And you go, okay, so wait, it was about defunding the police. And then even then you can go, well, you defunded the police, the crime rate skyrocketed, the murders exploded in this city because you defunded the police, because you hired the DA that won't put people in prison. And they go, well, that was misinterpreted. No, but we didn't mean that. It's like, no, you did mean it. You got what you wanted. It turned out terrible. Now you're pretending it was misinterpreted. It never was. You're all liars. You're all liars. And Bill Maher is helping to sort of launder their, you know, lies, but he's just as bad. Yeah, New York Times. Yes, we literally mean abolish the police. Psych. Gotcha.
Fight for our sovereignty, to fight to protect, again, what God gave us, which, I mean, our health is one of the biggest things. We're all at this point middle-aged. We're trying to have families. And I think with the transhumanist agenda, there is a little bit of a psyop afoot.
Said that the other day when I had you guys coming on. I said, we're doing something about what we can take control of. Mm. And then the last few years, Joe Rogan, one time at dinner, goes, about 3 years ago, goes, you're fat. Your own enemy. He does that to guests. It was like Theo Von, too. Get off that Prozac, you idiot. And people were mad at him. That's tough love Joe does. And he's there with Sean Johnson, the Navy SEAL guy that I'd known for years, but didn't really friends. Sean goes, fine, I'll train you. I'll meet you every morning. And I said, all right, let's do it. And then I lost like 70 pounds and I kind of halfway cut back and gained back 10. But now I'm back where I was. I'm going to go even lower. But the whole point is that Joe goes, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You think the globalists are going to kill you. You're killing yourself. And so that's where Masterpiece comes in. That's where doing all this comes in. I mean, this is real, folks. Methylene blue works. Bovine colostrum works. This, you'll get Masterpiece.com. The Masterpiece is unbelievable.
We are at a crossroads with the human, with the survival of the human species. And the people that have all the resources and all have spelled that out very clearly to us. And the things that they are putting inside of our body to complete that, mission. You got to get out. The fact of the matter is, zeolite, which is one of the main ingredients of Masterpiece, has been proven in all ways to remove every toxin that it's looked at grabbing. It performs. That's why it's called the Master Binder.
But yours is different.
Completely different.
Because it doesn't just pull stuff. It brings in the key C minerals.
Yes, absolutely. So any way that you would actually test Masterpiece out, which would be like its pH, its molecular composition, its molecular ratio, if it's isotonic and whatnot, it is identical to blood plasma. You're talking about marine plasma, sea plasma, minerals. It is the same molecular composition of as your blood profile. And so why does that matter? Blood is life. When you are grabbing the problem with our bodies, with the toxins in there, which is disrupting how our bodies perform on every level, it's literally made our bodies mineral deficient. Toxins take the place of minerals. So when the Masterpiece is carrying in minerals, when it takes a toxin, it's giving the perfect minerals right there at that time. That's why everyone that looks at the testing, whether it's our hair tissue mineral analysis practitioners, our blood testers, which we've done three different independent third-party labs doing different blood testing, they've never seen results like
this. Yeah, so regular zeolite just pulls out bad stuff but doesn't replace it. This is zeolite with a good thing, pulls out bad, it goes bloop, good.
Yeah. Our bodies are magical if you get the poisons out.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Benjamin, how do you always have the coolest clothes in town?
The AlexJonesStore.com, of course, my dear.
Really? That's so cool.
Of course.
TheAlexJonesStore.com!
Stranded on a deserted island with no food, no supplies, and no hope? Don't worry. The castaways had one thing the others didn't. Supplements from TheAlexJonesStore.com. While everyone else was eating coconuts, they were powering through the apocalypse. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Because survival starts with being prepared.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of the War Room for this Friday broadcast. I do want to remind you, you only got a couple days left to take advantage of the free bottle of Shilajit on offer now at thealexjonesstore.com. No matter what you order, we're putting a free bottle of Shilajit gummies in the box with your order. Go today, thealexjonesstore.com, the merchandise, the supplements. Again, if you're a parent, I gotta recommend the superfood green gummies for kids with paraprobiotics. They taste delicious. Your kids will love them. You can pack them away very easily. It's a whole bunch of these little bags, and I know there's like a ton of them. I mean, we packed this thing up to the brim here, and each one of these has the daily serving, four of them. They taste great. Your kids will love them. Easy to pack in a backpack or a day bag or your kid's lunchbox or your pocket, and obviously, it's good for adults, too. We have the adult version as well. The kid version might be a little bit better. So it's a 30-day supply. Get yours today, thealexjonesstore.com. And no matter what you order, you get that free bottle of Shilajit gummies because we're so confident that you'll love them and want more. We're giving you the first taste free. Now, I got a bunch of more videos I want to go to, again, from people who really know their stuff and have things. I think it's important for our audience to hear and to share and to tell your friends and family. But first, big story broke right before we went live. Milo Yiannopoulos has been detained by ICE in Louisiana. Milo Yiannopoulos, a British political commentator and former Kanye West chief of staff for the rapper's 2024 presidential campaign, was apprehended by ICE on Friday. Stories at alexjoneslive.com. The ICE online detainee database confirms the conservative activist was detained in New Orleans, where he was reportedly scheduled to attend a Kanye West concert. Journalist Laura Loomer took a victory lap on X, essentially boasting that she was the person who brought Yiannopoulos' immigration status to the federal government's attention. Quote, I was the first person to report on the fact that Milo was in the U.S. illegally, where he incited violence against President Trump and worked for Marjorie Taylor Greene, she wrote. Recently, Candace Owens invited the illegal alien into her home when Milo called for me to be assassinated. I reported him to ICE and the FBI. I told you all Milo was an illegal alien. He was detained in Louisiana by ICE. Milo is going to be deported back to the UK, where he can live among the Muslims he has recently chosen to embrace. Today is a great day for America. Loomer has the air of President Trump and frequently brags about tattling to POTUS, showing him mean social media posts and videos of people in the conservative movement criticizing some of his decisions. Yiannopoulos is actually a supporter of ICE, posting to social media last year, California needs ICE checkpoints at supermarket entrances, gas stations, strip malls, intersections, and government buildings, with on-the-spot deportation for anyone that can't prove they're in the U.S. legally, total legal immunity for ICE agents when they're on duty. DHS and Milo's attorneys have yet to release statements about the incident. And look, honestly, it's like, dude, you're an illegal alien. Like, what the hell? Why? Why are you an illegal alien? You couldn't get a visa? So I don't know what the details are exactly. I don't know if there's any more information out about this from when I printed this an hour ago. But I imagine he had a visa to work and to stay here, and he must have overstayed it a little while. Which, again, if, like, I don't actually, you know, I don't want anybody to get special treatment. But that includes one way or the other, right? If Milo Yiannopoulos is an illegal alien and overstayed his visa or whatever, and he's just on the list of everybody overstaying their visa, and he gets rounded up, like, tough luck, bro. You should have done it the right way. I don't know what you were thinking. I don't know why you, as such a public, high-profile, contentious figure, would risk this. That was just kind of stupid on your part. And I don't really feel that sorry for you. Why would you not make sure your immigration status was up to date? But if he's literally being targeted because Laura Loomer said it, that ain't right. That's just not right. It's as simple as that. Like, I don't want people being arrested and deported from this country because Laura frickin' Loomer decided she doesn't like him. And that seems to be why he was targeted. She's at least taking credit for that. So again, I would, if it came up that Milo Yiannopoulos just was swept up in an immigration raid because he's hanging out in front of a Home Depot parking lot or something, you know, then I would expect him to be treated like every other immigrant, and I wouldn't begrudge him being, you know, sent overseas. I would object in the exact same way if they intervened and said, well, he's an illegal immigrant, but we like him, so we're going to let him stay. I'd say, well, look, that's not the way the law works, so you got to kick him out. And I feel exactly the same way in reverse. If he's only being targeted because of who he is, it's worse than him not being targeted because of who he is. But Laura Loomer apparently is the one that gets to dictate, you know, where Trump's ire lands. Wonder what sort of blackmail will be released out of all of this. As we know, that's Milo's specialty. So I don't know. I don't know what the details are exactly, but it's just kind of like, really, dude, you can't do the right paperwork. Like, that's just pathetic. So sorry, you got to go. But really, Laura Loomer, because Laura Loomer doesn't like Milo because he worked for Marjorie Taylor Greene. So that's political persecution. So, like, maybe Milo should sue the Trump administration for targeted harassment. I wonder if he's even illegal. I mean, is he? I guess, if he got arrested, but you got to ask, like, would that happen to a normal person? If you're a visitor from the UK on vacation, you decide to extend it an extra week and overstay your visa, are they tracking you down and arresting you and throwing you in jail and putting your mugshot online? Probably not. So if that's what's happening, if that's what happened here, I would say that's, you know, malicious persecution. And he might have a good lawsuit on his hands. I'd support him in that. As long as Laura Loomer has to pay the price. Meanwhile, Trump quietly working to give parts of Yosemite to a private developer. For more than a year, the National Park Service has been secretly working to fulfill an unprecedented directive from Trump officials, parcel off a corner of Yosemite National Park to give it to a private developer. National Park Service staff in California and Washington, D.C. are trying to arrange a land exchange between a Nevada-based company and the federal government, according to four people directly familiar with discussions, as well as agency documents reviewed by Notice. This is from Notice.org. N-O-T-U-S. Since the spring of 2025, the Trump administration has been looking into ways it could cede a roughly quarter-mile strip of land inside Yosemite to a company that, through a web of limited liability companies, is operated by real estate developer and investment firm Kingsbarn Realty Capital. Officials are proposing the Park Service give up the land or interest in the land in the form of an easement and in return receive land of equal value somewhere in California that is yet to be decided. The private developers own an 83-acre plot of land just outside the western boundaries of Yosemite, about 5 miles from one park's defining ancient sequoia groves. Jeff Pori, the CEO of Kingsbarn, wants to build a short road connecting the property to one of Yosemite's central thoroughfares. The new road would give the land exceptionally rare private access to a park that is otherwise almost entirely buffered by national forests. The property's current access road is more than 10 miles from an entrance to the park and much farther from Yosemite's most iconic sites. Without a new road, visitors to the property, whether it be developed into a hotel, resort, or private residence, would need to drive an hour and a half in circuitous route to reach the popular Yosemite Valley. The planning process has created a tense environment behind National Park Service. So, you know, I can't wait. I can't wait for the Kushner Casino in Yosemite. Nothing says Yosemite like, you know, going to hang out in the new Miriam Adelson Casino built over the bluffs. It'll be beautiful. It'll be amazing. The golden age, right? Can we just leave the national parks alone? Can we just not do that? I don't know. It's just like enough already, I think, is how I feel. It's just like, can we not be parceling off parts of our natural inheritance as Americans to Trump's property developer friends so they can squeeze a little cash out of our natural resources and line his pockets? Can we just not literally sell off our country to the highest bidder? How about that? I just, you know, I'd like to be in that position one day, you know? I mean, you ever tried to do literally anything with the government program? You ever tried to, like, get an easement of your own? You have any luck? How hard was it? Did it ever happen? It's just like, try to get the city to trim the tree that's blocking the stop sign outside your house that's causing car crashes. It'll be months of rigmarole. Eventually, you just have to do it yourself. And then they'll come give you a ticket for, you know, illegal plant trimming on city property. Meanwhile, Trump's friends are like, you know, I like this part of Yosemite. Can I have it? And he's just like, yes. Great. That's privilege. You want to talk about privilege and advantage? How about the privilege of being friends with Trump and being able to make millions of dollars off of the rubes in America? This is a very amazing, very well thought out, very well done video by Connor Tomlinson about young white men and immigration and what's driving people. It's sort of an additional commentary related to the video that we opened this hour with, talking about the right and the left and the way the left is sort of surrendering in a de facto way to the more aggressive third world elements. And on that note, can we not come together on this? I mean, this is the problem with not aggressively promoting our own values and talking about the supremacy of America and Europe and Europeans and our culture and our way of life and the fact that it's our traditions and our history that allows the leftists to even exist at this point. So, like, this shouldn't be hard for leftists. If they are given the choice between, like, a Christian country or a Muslim country, you should be on the Christian side, and you don't have to wait until it's a crusade. You can recognize this right now. You can go, look, I might not be Christian. I might, you know, I might want to be LGBT or whatever else, but in order for me to be that, I got to have Christians in charge. I got to resist the invasion from these African warlords and rapists and murderers. But we cannot rely on them ever awakening to basic reality. We don't have to. They can either join us, which we'd love to have them, or we have to get them out of the way and destroy them. And that's just how it is. That's just how it is, which is why I always say, like, nationalism really is the solution to everything. It really is racism, the left-right divide. Like, if we all just, we can have whatever views we want as we all, if we all understand at the very basic level, we have common interests and we have to protect those first and foremost, because if those aren't protected, nothing else matters. That you can't have a liberal society if you don't have borders that keep the illiberal people out. All of this should be obvious. And honestly, this would be an instance where it's like, can we take a page out of the book of the Jews? We take one page out of the book of the Jews where the Jews never seem to have this problem. They all seem to like understand when something serves the Jewish interest or protects the Jewish community, and they're all in favor of it. And you can have Jews that are at each other's throats. You can have, for example, a Laura Loomer and a Milo Yiannopoulos, right? Two Jews that just hate each other, obviously, significantly. But maybe they aren't the best example. But you know what I mean, right? You can have like a rabid leftist, you know, communist Jewish person, and you can have a hardcore Wall Street conservative Jewish person, but they're both gonna cheer for Netanyahu, right? And when Netanyahu gives his speech in the U.S. Congress, you know, when the president gives a speech, if he's Republican, the Republicans rise. If he's Democrats, the Democrats rise, and the other side stay seated. When it's Netanyahu, both rise. I would just like to see, and again, this is my John Lennon imagine, my optimistic dreaming fantasy of a world in which Americans just like supported Americans. And like you stood up for the president because he's the president of your people. And you support him because he's there to protect and benefit and serve your people. And so even if you disagree with him a little bit, you understand at the end of the day, you have collective interests and he's the one trusted to safeguard them. Again, Jews get this. Jews are very, very, very good at this type of thing. They can have all sorts of disagreements. At the end of the day, they understand what is a threat to themselves and they oppose it ubiquitously, universally. Can we not do that? Can we not have just a little bit of that instinct in us that says you're black, I'm white, you're Jewish, I'm Christian, but we're all American, right? So let's support the American thing. Let's defend America. Let's make sure that's satisfied, that need is met. Then we can debate all this nuanced stuff. But like, here's some things that are non-negotiable. The safety of our country, the prosperity of our people. Like, that's got to come first. All that other stuff follows. Doesn't seem that complicated to me. That's not impossible. I see it with other populations in stark relief. It's just white people have been deliberately programmed not to do this. And so we're being destroyed. It's not that complicated. Let's go to clip six here. This is Connor Tomlinson. You can follow him on X at @Con_Tomlinson. Let's watch.
And they say what seems to be working is unrepentant bigotry, but no, it's taking your own side. It's refusing to give your country away to anyone from anywhere that shows up and would like a handout, or who might prospectively be grafted into the American people because they put their hand on any book, doesn't have to be the Bible, say the Pledge of Allegiance that they could abandon seconds after, and declare themselves to be devoted to American values which the Founding Fathers would not recognize. And the people that say this is the case are the liberals on the right, which is the Republican establishment, or again, the British Conservative establishment, who say that anyone from anywhere can become one of your countrymen, they are entitled to your inheritance, just as if they identified as a member of your family and wrote themselves into your parents' will, robbing you of your actual home. The campaign does represent that youthful energy that wants to take its own side, that recognizes that every group is allowed to play identity politics at the heritage populations of our respective countries' expense, while we are discouraged from doing so by our own side, who say, don't play identity politics, that's what the left wants. You are playing into division, as if there were some original position where we could be united with everyone from everywhere if we just stopped seeing skin color. and abided by the sanitized version of Martin Luther King's vision encapsulated in I Have a Dream speech and literally nowhere else in his body of work. What young men want is a their country first, America first foreign policy, not entangling ourselves in faraway conflicts, in lands full of people that hate us, invading their country, then importing them by the millions. They want an end to mass migration, a reversal of unwanted, undesirable demographic and cultural change. They want to grow up in the neighborhoods that felt familiar to them in their childhood and hand those off to their own children. They want things to be affordable again, rather than printing loads of money to squander on welfare, babysitting the third world in our countries, or foreign aid in their countries, or marshalling our military forces to go and do regime change in their countries, which doesn't last all of 5 minutes, but costs plenty of our country's blood and treasure. They want reindustrializing. They want prosperity. They want peace. They want a patrimony to hand down to their descendants. They want to honor the sacrifices made by their ancestors and claim exclusive rights to their country, to control their own political and demographic destinies. All those things are reasonable demands. And if right-wingers on their ostensible side won't secure that for them, then they have nothing to offer them. And just calling them names will not change their minds. Sure, some of it's performative for social media, but Schadenfreude and sensationalism is just hyperbole for the majority wanting to take their own side and therefore engage in the zero-sum game of political representation. And if they see the other side losing, then they see that as a win for their side. And they're doing that because the other side is playing that way too. Because the Democratic Socialists of America are not socialists. They are third world ethnic partisans who hate white people and want to steal their stuff. That's the same with the new Arab guy in Michigan. It's with Zohran Mamdani. It's the same with the black woman who wipes her hands on the American flag. It's the same with AOC and the rest of the squad. Rashida Tlaib, who is just a partisan for Palestine. Ilhan Omar, who wants to defraud the American taxpayer so Somalis can send money back home in remittances to their failed country. These people just hate white people and want to take their stuff. It is an ethnic extraction racket, not a retranslation and elucidation of Marxian economic theory. They recognize that the people that they have been forced to pay to import and house at their expense, who have been given unfettered access to the political system despite having nothing but contempt for the country and the people in it, they recognize they are playing a zero-sum game of ethnic patronage, and so they would like to meet like for like because they think they're going to win, because they're the majority population, because their civilization has been the most ingenuitive, prosperous, powerful in all of history. The American Empire displaced the British Empire, which was the heir to the Roman Empire and the nation states of Greece and the Holy Roman Empire and and Christendom, which spanned the entire Western world. All of these things come from European civilization, especially the Anglos. And so if the Anglos take their own side, well, we're going to win. And the only way we don't get to take our own side is if the gatekeepers on our side say to young people who have been shut out of those institutions, you don't get to come in until you are sufficiently sanitized, liberal, colorblind, and incapable of defending yourself, as we have failed to defend ourselves and you for the last few decades, therefore allowing the left to run a roughshod with their ethnic resentment and their sexual perversion in every institution. They didn't even need to do a long march. They just sprinted right through the halls and we didn't stop it. Like it or not, immigration restriction, nativism, nationalism, economic protection, taking your own side is the future of the right. As a response, the anti-white, third-worldist, dirtbag, resentful left. And if the liberal gatekeepers on the right can't get on board with that, they need to get out of the way.
Absolutely, bro. I don't know if I've ever heard the situation broken down that succinctly and that brilliantly. He's exactly right. And again, the question is, who would argue against that? What argument is there against that? He's not wrong. You can call him racist. That may be the only thing you can do. Attempt to smear the idea because you can't actually confront it. But obviously, everybody looking around recognizes that every other group of people is not just allowed to, but expected to and honored and celebrated for taking their own side. And it is the old guard boomers whose entire lives have been defined by their willingness to allow liberalism to take over, that refuse to get with the times and understand the real danger they're putting their progeny in. Just amazing stuff by Connor Tomlinson. Follow him at CON_Tomlinson on X. Brilliant stuff. And it looks like we maybe just have time. Well, we don't quite have time to get to the final video, Glenn Greenwald talking about Flock. Flock continues to be a major problem. Some good news that I didn't get to today, but we'll mention here. Trump to combat meatpacking monopoly by letting farmers and ranchers process their own food. Following President Trump's controversial move of allowing cheap foreign beef to flood the U.S., which would put more financial pressure on American cattlemen, Trump is now seeking to legalize food processing by farmers and ranchers, effectively cutting out the meat packing monopoly, which consumes much of the revenue of the industry, something we've been asking about and demanding for a while. So that's very good to see. I'd like to see the monopoly, which has taken over the meat packing industry, be, you know, broken up in the way of Teddy Roosevelt, but I mean, Trump is literally selling off chunks of Yosemite, so I'm not sure Teddy Roosevelt is his favorite guy exactly. We also have more church burnings in the Western world. Rebel News, Ezra Levant reports from the scene of yet another shocking church blaze in Canada after a historic New Brunswick church was targeted in an arson attack earlier this week. I'm gonna have to do a real full-fledged breakdown of the church burnings because there's been at least three this week. Chicago, of course, New York, there's this one, New Brunswick. And it's an attack. It's obviously an attack. There have been more churches burned than black men killed by the police in 2020. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? That if this was a concern to the people in power, there would be media reports daily about the pandemic, the epidemic of church burnings, that it's obviously foreign elements deliberately burning churches and probably being allowed to by the socialist rulers of these cities, who then turn around and condemn the churches and have them totally destroyed, like what happened in New York City. So sort of this feedback loop where they don't have to conspire exactly. And this happened to the Chicago one too. It was burned. It could have been repaired. It would have been easily repaired. It did not destroy the whole building, but they came in and condemned a historic church and tore it down because a radical anti-Christian tried to burn it, did burn a little bit of it, so they tore the whole thing down. So this is happening at a shocking rate, just nobody notices because nobody reports on it, and I haven't even done a good job of reporting on this. Maybe next week we'll actually do a full-fledged like breakdown of just the daily church burnings. Always historic churches, always in areas where there's a thriving, diverse community, and it always allows to burn down to the basement. That's going to be about it for us here on The War Room. Make sure you support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Fantastic new products there practically daily. The new superfood gummies for kids, I think, is a bombshell product, and I'm not just pushing it because I think it'll sell well. I just think it's a great product. I use it myself and give it to my own kids. Thealexjonesstore.com. Go there today. Keep us on the air and in the fight. You have a good weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.
I wanted to show you this because this is a spectacular product that funds our operation. And if you look at the private label that Bigley got for this new Optimal Human Greens, the adult one is really great and super concentrate, and like a couple gummies is each pack's like the equivalent of a whole bunch of giant salads and bowls of fruits and, you know, everything else. I mean, this thing is just full of individual daily packs of seven gummies each. But this is the one that's really cool that I'm going to have for my 9-year-old, my other kids are already grown up and out of the house. This is the Greens Gummies for Kids. This doesn't just have every vitamin and mineral with your daily allowance or above it. This has a whole bunch of superfoods, probiotics, and then magnesium, just B12, everything else. This is insane. Absolutely wild. Super concentrated gummies. Whole food vegetables, whole food fruits, vitamins and minerals, antioxidants, gut health probiotics, and so much more. Very exciting. Look, when you open it up, it's great for their lunchbox. Look at all this. Look at all this. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Perfect to put in your backpack. Perfect to put, you know, just in your coat so you don't forget to take it. But the best thing to do is just take it in the morning. But regardless, when you're on the go, your 18-wheeler, whatever, the adult and the children's are amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
退屈な午後にザクッと革命。 Yummy gummies. Gummies good for you. Crunch-o!
Hi-ya!
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.